Do that.
Thank you.
Number three, approval of the revised agenda. We are adding 11A to the consent agenda. It's the board to consider approval of requests from First Baptist Church of Madison and Junior Smith to waive boat ramp fees for 10 boats for the 2019 annual Take a Kid Fishing Day. Are there any other additions, deletions, changes, or anything else to today's agenda? Okay, if not, is there a motion to approve the revised agenda?
Motion to approve, second.
We got a motion by Commissioner Page, second by Commissioner Moody. Any further discussion? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Bids and public hearings, number four. The board to hold a public hearing set for this date at 9 a.m. or as soon thereafter as possible to discuss and receive public input for the local transportation disadvantaged program. Good morning. So our local transportation disadvantaged program is a great program that benefits several of the citizens of Taylor County. We currently have 25 stops on our shuttle that runs weekly, Monday through Saturday. We also provide transportation to our veterans, to the VA hospital in Lake City and Tallahassee every week. And we provide transportation for our Special Olympics participants with their practices and the SNAP program. In 2018, 17,233 passengers rode the shuttle. 5,830 were for medical, 3,540 were for employment, 4,376 were for education or daycare, 1,576 were for nutritional, and 1,911 were for license or other trips. I would like to thank the board for your continued support of the program. We have a lot of support in the audience for the program, and we'd like to thank Mr. Conrad for funding the free holiday shuttle this past year.
Thank you.
This grant that is received requires that we have a public hearing. So at this time, I'd like to open the floor for the public hearing. So if anyone would like to come forward and speak, you can do so at this time. Come to the podium, state your name and address.
Hello, board. I appreciate y'all listening to me. I'm Rose Rux. I also ride the event personally for myself. I'm also a coach of Special Olympics. And this shuttle is so very vital to the community, to our athletes who sometimes that's their only way of transportation. You know, a lot of people that's their only way of transportation to get to and from the doctor's store or whatever. And we depend on it so much, and it's so vital to the community. And I hope that you continue it because it is so necessary. Thank you all very much for your time.
Thank you.
Anyone else would like to speak? Okay, if not, I agree with what's been said. It is a very, very important program. We've always supported this program and we'll continue to support it, doing anything that we can to help. Appreciate everything that staff does and the volunteers and everybody else for such a, like I said, a wonderful program. Anybody else?
Is there anything that you need to in order for us to support? This is, we only have one public hearing, if you?
One.
Okay. As soon as you close it, I'd like to make a motion.
Okay. If there's no one else that wishes to speak, we'll close the public hearing.
I'll make a motion that we continue funding the transportation disadvantage.
I'll second your motion.
Okay. I have a motion by Commissioner Gibbs and a second by Commissioner Murphy. Any further discussion? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Thank you all very much.
Thank you.
Number five, the board to hold the second and final public hearing set for this date at 9:05 a.m. or as soon thereafter as possible on the passage of a proposed ordinance to amend ordinance number 2011-03, Taylor County Code Section 42-717, setbacks. Again, this is a public hearing. Well, first of all, I think, is there a motion to read the ordinance by title only?
I move. It is read by title only.
Okay, we have a motion by Commissioner Gibbs, second by Commissioner Moody. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Mr. Bishop.
An ordinance of the Taylor County Board of County Commissioners, which amends ordinance 2011-03, Taylor County Code Section 42-717, setbacks, providing severability and providing an effective date.
Thank you. Okay, now the floor is open for the public hearing, so anyone who wishes to speak may come forward, state your name and address. You have 3 minutes to speak. Anybody? Yes.
Morning, Madam Chair, Commissioners. My name is David Weiss, 123 South Calhoun Street, also Mullen, Tallahassee, Florida. Here on behalf of Steinhatchee Ancient Oaks Property Owners Association, thank you very much for the opportunity to speak this morning. We'll be brief. I recognize that y'all have a long agenda. We are here in support of the amendment. Just very briefly, I think a little history as to why this amendment is needed. Back in 1980, the Ancient Oaks subdivision was platted and the plat was approved. It was approved as an air park community with 126 one-acre lots. And in 1991, excuse me, and it also had 15-foot setbacks. In 1991, the future land use map was adopted and it was put into the Ag 2 land use category, which is 10-acre minimum lot sizes plus 50 front and 35-foot side setbacks. Under the comp plan and the land development code, these lots are recognized as vested lots of record, but they have to comply with applicable setbacks, which means that they can practically be developed. So this proposed amendment would fix this problem by making the applicable setbacks for these non-conforming lots basically the same as conforming lots that are of similar size. That would eliminate the need for variance requests. It would prevent potential takings or Burt Harris claims. Would also enhance industry, employment, economic development, potentially tourism, by promoting some smart and desirable growth and development with residential and commercial construction, as well as facilitate construction of infrastructure to serve the residents. You also could potentially see an increased ad valorem tax and fuel sales. This amendment is consistent with the comprehensive plan and the land development code. I'm not going to go through all the provisions. I know that the county attorney and staff have done a great job with putting together a report and identifying some of those provisions. Happy to answer any questions if you'd like. But in closing, we do agree with the unanimous recommendation of the Planning Board to adopt this amendment. And again, I thank you for your time.
Thank you. Any questions from the board? Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. Madam Chair, Commissioners, and staff, my name is Alan Rice, and I reside at 2200 Bell Drive in Steinhatchee, which is Ancient Oaks Air Park. I'm the secretary of the association, the Property Owner Association there. And I'd just like to say that I'd like to thank the Planning Board for approving the setback amendment and the Taylor County Commission for sponsoring the amendment. If this amendment is approved today, hundreds of Taylor County property owners will then have the room needed for construction on their lots. And that's it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else wish to speak? Okay. If not, are there any comments or questions from the board? Okay, if not, is there a motion to amend and adopt ordinance number 2011-03?
I'll make a motion to adopt.
I'll second.
Okay, we have a motion by Commissioner Moody, a second by Commissioner Page. Any further discussion?
Thank you.
If not, we'll have a roll call vote.
Mr. Moody? Mr. Bailey?
Aye.
Mr. Dent?
Yes.
Mr. Murphy?
Aye.
Mr. Beaver?
Yes.
Passed by unanimous vote of the board.
Number six, the board to hold a public hearing set for this date at 9:10 a.m. or soon thereafter as possible on the passage of a proposed ordinance to amend ordinance number 2009-808, which requires that the applicant desiring an economic development tax exemption shall show proof that all ad valorem taxes on the property, real or personal, have been paid for the year when the application has been made. We have a motion to read this ordinance by title only.
I move. A second.
We have a motion by Commissioner Dent, second by Commissioner Murphy. Any further discussion? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Mr. Bishop.
Yes, ma'am. An ordinance of the Taylor County, Florida, which amends ordinance number 2009-08, Taylor County Code Section 70-38, which requests that the applicant desiring an economic development tax exemption shall show proof that all ad valorem taxes on the property, real or personal, have been paid for the year when the application has been made, providing severability and providing an effective date. And if they don't show it, the application will be denied pursuant to the ordinance. It's a short one.
Thank you. Again, this is a public hearing. Anyone who wishes to speak, you can come forward and speak at this time. Okay. If not, then the public hearing is closed. And I'll ask for, is there a motion to adopt this ordinance?
Motion to adopt.
Second.
We have a motion by Commissioner Page, second by Commissioner Moody. Any further discussion? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Roll call.
I'm sorry, roll call vote.
Mr. Moody?
Yes.
Mr. Page?
Yes.
Mr. Dent?
Yes.
Mr. Murphy?
Aye.
Mr. Beaver?
Yes.
Passed by unanimous vote of the board.
Thank you. Item 7, board to hold a public hearing set for this date at 9:15 a.m. or soon thereafter as possible on the passage of a proposed ordinance to allow contractors and citizens to pay a fee to dispose of vegetative debris, tree debris, at the county's incinerator site. Is there a motion to read this?
Motion to read my time. Second.
Motion by Commissioner Page, second by Commissioner Moody. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Mr. Bishop.
This is ordinance day, right?
This is ordinance day.
An ordinance of the Board of County Commissioners of Taylor County, Florida, allowing contractors and citizens to pay a fee to dispose of vegetative debris, tree debris, at the county's incinerator site, providing for fees to be set by resolution, providing for severability, and providing an effective date.
Thank you. The floor is now open for the public hearing. Anyone wishing to speak concerning this issue could come forward at this time. Yes, sir.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm Stan Ridgeway, 901 Riverside, Steam Hatchie. Obviously, I'm one of your citizens that pay taxes. A lot of the tax revenue is taken from the school board, benefits others in the county, and indirectly benefits me. The one fee that I pay that is valuable to me as a property owner with a small lot with palm trees on it is disposal of the roll-off sites of they're this refuge for my lawn. When you consider your fees, I would urge you to consider raising the $140 as much as you can. looking at who is paying them, look at the hunting camps and RVers that are paying less than $140 and raising your money that way. Please consider it. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Anyone else wish to speak? If not, I'll close the public hearing and hear from the board.
I'd like to say something about it. Contractors around Bedford County are ready to pay to get their stuff burned. They would rather carry the bowl out here to get it burned than the incinerator site to get it burned and carry it to Greenville. And I mean, there's no sense in burning that extra fuel, but it's a blessing for them to hear, and I'm really, all of them have talked to me about it, and they're glad that we're going to do this. And I'm like the other gentleman here about the throw-off site. $140 is, we're going in the hole at $140. We need to go up on that speed. And every camper trailer in Bedford County has got a kitchen just like every household. And they buying just as many groceries and putting out just as much garbage. When they buy a set of tires and carry them on, they get ready to dispose of them. They have to carry them to the roll off site. And when they buy a tire at the store, they charge them $3 a piece to dispose of them. And they keep the money and people carry them home, and then we end up disposing of it. So, I mean, we got to get a handle on the throw off side. And that's where I'm at it with.
Thank you, Commissioner. Now, this number seven, it says that on the passage of a proposed ordinance to allow contractors and citizens to pay a fee to dispose of vegetative debris, tree debris, at the county's incinerator site. So I'm assuming that what this means is that the contractors don't have to go there, but they can go there.
That's my understanding of why this ordinance was created. Mm-hmm. It was a request of the board to allow contractors to put a method in place for mainly for contractors to take tree debris to the incinerator site, and that fee would be set by resolution.
Yeah. And we're going to talk about the other issues later on in the agenda before we get into with the other stuff. But now, do we have a fee schedule?
That we will be coming forward with that. That will be set by resolution. So once a fee schedule is set, then it would just be, the board would just pass a resolution. And I believe we had a number in mind that we can talk about when we talk about solid waste operations. Gary, I apologize, I'm gonna spring a question on you because I just thought about it. As far as the use of our incinerator, I know we have to monitor that with our emissions testing that we do every year. Is there a point where we would have to limit the burning?
Yes, there's a, so we have to tap close to that though, but there is a limit on how much you can burn. Mm-hmm. There's restraints as far as what time you gotta cut off in the afternoon so it doesn't burn at night. And we kind of touched on that. The key thing you gotta look at with bringing in debris is the size.
Right.
What kind of debris? And
you come forward.
I didn't, and I apologize. I just thought about how to monitor that.
That's kind of the issues with that. With the burning, I think Malcolm was involved in that, and we don't have the incinerators under a different permit than open pit burning. They can burn later in the evening, but the incinerator, you have to cut off around. Make sure it's out by the time they leave that position, probably around 2:30 in the day. But we still, I think we can stay up with what we have as far as tonnage wise with the contractors. I'm not sure how much volume we're gonna get on that. I'm not sure, you know, nobody's approached me, but I think if we have to, you know, we can only scale back a little bit if we get too much on the ground.
Okay, I just have an operational question, and I understand, you know, that you have to shut it off at a certain time. I mean, that's real clear. Now, if someone does come after that time, or when they do come, do they stick it in the incinerator?
No.
Do they dump it somewhere on the, and so if they come after that time, can they offload it and it's burnt the next day?
What happens is, if it's green, you got to let it kind of let it sit for a couple of weeks to dry it out. Mm-hmm. What you're looking at, we'll have a guy there, he stays there till about 5 o'clock, 5:30, so it's open where they can come in and they'll measure the loads and stuff like that. But usually, right now, it would probably have to sit a couple of weeks before we can burn it. We got plenty of room out there. It's just the DEP wants you to turn so much, they don't want it sitting on the ground for a long period of time.
About how long do you know?
I think the range is that you got to turn at, I'll have to look and make sure, but it might be a 6-month period they want you. They don't really come out and just, you know, measure a load. But if we can stay above, you know, like they come in the clearing and there's a lot of debris and they come back the next month or come by and that area's cleaned out, they know pretty well we're handling everything that's coming in. And they kind of monitor us over the years and they know we're not abusing it, you know, running at night and stuff like that. So they got a good take. Because they come at different hours in the, you know, through the month, so.
So just for my interest and the public's interest, and so you have a capacity to burn so much, mm-hmm. and that's all you can do.
Mm-hmm.
And then as people are bringing this in and leaving it, and you get to the point where you have more than you can handle, then you have to, I guess if somebody pulls up with a big load or something, you have to turn them away at that point in time.
We should know a little. We can, like, we know the contractors come in, let's say there's 6 contractors coming in, you know, pretty regular. We can scale them back probably a little bit. You know, there'd be a couple of weeks we could tell them, say, hey, we got to scale back just a little bit, clean this up a little bit, give us a couple of weeks, and we'll be back on track. But I don't see that as a problem. I think once we can jump back on it. Now, what happens sometimes when we get into like a hurricane or something like that, then it really puts a lot of pressure on us out there as far as that. But we got plenty of room out there we can clear off and get to. You know, they haven't put a stipulation on how much we put out there. It's just they want us to turn it a certain amount of time.
Right, and we're praying that we don't have
to. No, I don't want
to. Storm this year. So my other question is, do you have adequate staff right now to...
We do. We had a glitch. We haven't been able to burn in the last 4 months. Our tractor that we use, the Kubota out there, caught on fire. And it's been in the shop since 4 months, 3.5 months. And they're working on it. It had some major damage on it.
You're not trying to track.
You know, and you're right. I would take a new one. That was a pretty new one, so... What happened was, I think some sparks got up under there,
mm-hmm.
and or it was electrical damage. They don't know for sure, but it had some really a lot of damage to it. And I think when they were running it, trying to back it off down the hill, mm-hmm. they may have pulled in some of the air cleaner position, you know, into the motor itself.
So my thoughts would be that now that this ordinance has been approved, that we'll come back to the board and we will request approval of an invoicing system like we presented before. And I think the number that we had discussed is $4.90 a cubic yard for vegetative debris.
And that equates about $49 a ton. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so when we do pass this, if we pass this ordinance today, mm-hmm. then we still will not have people coming until we get the resolution done. Just make sure that we don't want to overcharge anybody, but we want to make sure, and I know y'all would, that we're going to be...
When we brought it up last time, that's about what they're charging over there also.
Yeah. It's tough.
And you can monitor that, I'm sure, along the way, you know, to see that that's keeping us... keeping our head above water.
We will.
Okay. I appreciate y'all's work on this.
Here we go.
It's time.
advertise to the public the hour that it's going to be open, we will, and the day it's going to be open, and this says, and, you know, and the citizen on the resolution here, and contractor and citizen, so you're going to have all kinds of different people coming.
And that's fine, and I don't think we're going to see a lot more, I think, because a lot of contractors are dumping on us at the roll-off sites right now. I think we're getting a lot of that free. I think it's just going to be where they have the option to come on out and use that facility. The size thing is going to cut them back a little bit as far as the large debris that they're still going to have to haul that. You know,
you're going to have to advertise too that there can't be any contamination in the load. Mm-hmm. And you'll have the right to turn them back if they
absolutely
have a bunch of treated lumber and, you know, metal in the load or anything like that. Mm-hmm.
It's nothing we're not doing right now. We can make that work.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
I have a comment.
Yes.
If a contractor has the option to go to the roll-off site for free, I mean, they're not really not supposed to, the contractor, no. Or go over here to the incinerator site to pay for it. You can go to the free site, you can get by it.
Well, I think what we're going to see is the contractors with the huge trailers that we're not seeing at the roll-off sites, because we won't let them in the dump trailers.
So you see that.
We'll see that.
That's what I'm thinking we'll see.
I think they're slipping in with the small trailers, but if they have an option to load a big trailer time-wise, they'll run it out there and dump it to get back to the job.
All right, now the size limit is the same as the incinerator. It's 10-inch.
What happens is when you dump a larger log in there, first of all, our Kubota isn't designed to dump that. And the incinerator, you want to damage it by putting huge logs in there, busting the walls out. But what happens if you put a really large log in there, it may burn longer into the day, and that way the fire does not go out in the prescribed time. And that's what we fight against. And we've got some larger logs in there because we had to clear out the trees for, you know, public works, of course. We had to cut them up in small sections just to get them in there.
Pack them up.
Yeah.
There's going to be, you don't have a limit in your time. Yep. I mean, that length, they got to cut them off.
And we'll ride them, let the water run through, and we've gotten pretty well. Mm-hmm. We know exactly kind of what we're going on
there. Do you use Jim's favorite? Well, you really keep this can far enough down the road now.
It's time to get this done.
Well, and that's what the contractors want, and I think it gives them option to. I think the money part of it ain't the big issue. I think the time runner from steam hatch you clear to off cellar back, they can make a quick run into town dump and get back out.
Get
back on the job. I think that's going to be the key.
Okay, thank you. Okay, there are any other comments or questions? Is there a motion to approve this ordinance?
I'm sorry.
We have a motion by Commissioner Murphy, a second by Commissioner Moody. Any further discussion? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
I'm sorry.
Mr. Moody?
Yes.
Mr. Page?
Yes.
Mr. Dent?
Yes.
Mr. Murphy?
Aye.
Mr. Moody?
Yes.
That's
by
unanimous vote.
Thank you. Consent items 8 through 11A.
Motion to approve.
Second.
We have a motion by Commissioner Page, second by Commissioner Dixon. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Public request number 12. The board to further discuss the donation of property to Habitat for Humanity for the construction of a family home as agended by the county administrator.
As you may recall, Ms. Patricia Myron has appeared before the board, I think twice now, to request the possibility of the donation of a particular lot. It's county-owned property parcel 09851-000, which is in Steinhatchee. And staff and Ms. Annie Mae have researched this particular property. And at our last meeting in January, it was basically left with Ms. Annie Mae to do some additional research on the value of the property and to ensure that the new property owners could pay the tax burden that would be associated with this property. Ms. Annie Mae, from what I understand that from what Ms. Myron told me, all your questions have been answered on the
well, so all I wanted to have already known that the value of this property for the last 4 or 5 years has been $25,000. To make sure that the home they're building on there is starting off with the value of $25,000, and you add the home to it, can those people afford to pay taxes on the house you build on that lot? And I gave them we have some more achievement deeds. I think it's 5 or 6 now, and there was a lot in Senhatchie. And I gave her that information, so if she wanted to look up that information and see if that lot would be better because it's less valuable. Did you look at that at all?
Yes, ma'am, we did, and there's no access to the property. There's plotted roadways to it, but it's about 3 properties in from the nearest roadway, dirt road. So it's not really accessible.
It's on the street you had to know about the county.
Yes, ma'am, that's correct. So in order for us to build, we have to wait till the county gets access.
I just wanted everybody to know the value of that property is $25,000. In fact, well, currently now.
Okay.
The last tax roll I had, and those property owners needs to know that, and I'm sure that they can pay the tax.
Okay, I want to ask our county attorney, for these other lots that our clerk has just described, what would be the process for them to have access to it? What would we need to do?
Probably open up a can of worms there, because as you all recall, the initial surveying of Senhatchie lots back in the 30s, there's a lot of quote unquote streets that have grown over that aren't on streets, as everyone is a little familiar with Senhatchie. So what would have to happen is, say for instance, a lot was picked out with a street that way, then the board would need to open that up. There might be some claims of adverse possession against the county with regard to people who are in close access or close proximity to those particular streets. So what you're doing, it can be done, but you're opening up a Pandora's box.
Okay. Did you find any other properties other than that one?
No, I looked at all the achievement deeds that we have that's already achieved for the county through the tax deed process, and that was the only one in Senhatchie. And I understand that somebody has contributed some funding to this project, and it's got to be in Senhatchie for this habitat on it. But I told you that property was 28,000, exactly. And the home said it went from 25.
So then you add a home to that, and you have to pretty hefty tax bill after that.
Y'all explain that to the people that you're doing. I mean, is that fine?
Well, we take all of those things into consideration when we're actually building the house and determining the cost to the homeowner.
Right.
But we also, as I've explained to Ms. Annie Mae, is that we also escrow their taxes and their insurance to assure that those taxes and those insurances are maintained for the benefit of Habitat, because we are the mortgage holder. So we want to make sure always that the property taxes and the homeowners insurances are maintained.
For how long?
The life of the loan.
Ms. Patricia, does that include all insurance, flood insurance and all that?
Homeowners and flood
insurance.
Okay. So the new homeowner will have a burden to make their escrow payments.
Yes, sir.
Take care of all the insurance and the taxes.
Yes, sir.
So that shouldn't be a concern to us, because they're going to have to escrow that amount.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Having learned all that, 5 seconds or less, I'll make the motion that we donate this property.
Let me ask a question. What happens if those people live in that house 2 years and something comes up, illness or whatever, and they can't make payments on the house, what happens to that?
Then if it cannot be resolved, then we would end up foreclosing on the property.
Okay, so that would foreclose on.
And you know, somebody else had the property.
Yes. Yes.
But they have to qualify as a tenant?
No, if we have to foreclose on the property, then we sell on the courthouse stairs. We offer to the public.
Thank you. Commissioner, it is okay with you. I would like to see if there's anyone, before we do a motion, I'd like to see if there's anyone else here that would like to speak for or against this issue.
No doubt.
So is there, yes.
I'm Doris Fennell, and I'm a member of the Board of Habitat. This property that you're discussing has been sitting there for years and years and years. And we have the money to build the house. But as you all know, property in Steamhatchee is outrageous. And if we have to buy the property, we can't build a house right now. We have a family who qualifies. We have the protections that you're concerned about. And we really wish that you would consider you're going to be getting tax money, and this thing is going to be getting a home. Thank you for listening.
Thank you.
The county has owned the property since 1948 when Mr. Barney Oakland and his wife developed subdivision that needed that 10-tax plot between 48.
Okay. Is there anyone else that would like to speak for or against this item?
My name is Mary Ann Walker. I'm also on the Habitat Board. And just being on Habitat Board has been an amazing thing to watch and see and grow, and for us to get going again, because for years Habitat kind of just, you know, fizzled out. And even though it's just one family at the time, you consider all the Habitat for Humanities worldwide and internationally, there's a lot of people that does get homes, and we do make sure that they qualify, because Habitat standards are very, very strict. People think they just get a home for free and they're, you know, they're learning. That is not the way it is. And basically, we have the right as the Habitat mortgage holder to set the perimeters so that the families can afford to make those payments. And we know in Steamhatchee, taxes and everything is a little bit higher. But I believe that we, with us working with this family, that it would be good. And like I said, like Pat said, if something bad happens down the road, we're just like a bank, which I do work at, so I'm very familiar with what happens. Regardless if it's a sad situation or whatever, the property has to be paid for, the loan has to be paid for, the taxes, insurance has to be paid for. So if something happens and they can't, then we can sell the property, take care of everything, and you have a new owner come in, but you would continue getting your tax revenue and what you're not actually getting anything right now.
Mm-hmm. Well, see, this is a learning process for me too, because these things I was not aware of, so I appreciate y'all educating me a little bit.
It's taken us a while to learn it all too, believe me.
Okay, well, thank you.
We've gotten a pretty good handle on it, and we appreciate it very much.
Thank you.
Have a question. If the board decides to deed the property, it's deeded to Habitat, right? Okay, and so y'all would give me the information so that can't we do a county deed? It's a little bit different from the regular deed. You would get in touch with me, or have your attorney get in touch with me?
End of the law would get in touch with you.
I look forward to it if they pass that.
Okay. Sorry
about that.
Okay.
All right.
If you want to make a motion, you
may. My motion was for the county to instruct our attorney to prepare a county deed for the donation of this property. This is under discussion to Habitat for Humanities.
And I'll second that motion.
A motion by Commissioner Page, a second by Commissioner Moody. Any further discussion? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion carries.
Thank you very much.
Item 13, Victor Cora, 2026-0, to discuss partnering with Taylor County to help ensure an adequate account, and the board to consider adoption of proclamation. Do we want to want to do the proclamation first, at 6. Okay, look, for right now, let's, is there a motion to read this proclamation?
I move.
Second.
Motion by Commissioner Gibbs, second by Commissioner Page. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Mr. Bishop.
Partnering with the 2020 Census Bureau to help ensure an accurate count for Taylor County. Whereas an accurate census count is vital to our community and residents' well-being by helping planners determine where to locate schools, daycare centers, roads, and public transportation, hospitals, and other facilities, and achieving an accurate and complete count of the nation's growing and changing population. Whereas more than $400 billion per year in federal and state funding is allocated to states and communities based in part on census data, whereas census data helps determine how many seats each state will have in the U.S. House of Representatives and often is used for the redistricting of state legislators, county and city councils, and voting districts. Whereas the 2020 census creates jobs that stimulate economic growth and increase employment. Whereas the information collected by the census is confidential and protected by law under Title 13 U.S. Code. Now, therefore, we proclaim that the Taylor County Board of County Commissioners is committed to partnering with the U.S. Census Bureau to help ensure a full and accurate count in 2020. As a 2020 census partner, we will, one, support the goals and ideals of the 2020 census and disseminate 2020 census information to encourage those in our community to participate. Two, encourage people in our community to place an emphasis on the 2020 census and participate in events and initiatives that will raise overall awareness and ensure a full and accurate census. Three, support census takers as they help our community complete an accurate count. Four, create or seek opportunities to collaborate with other like-minded groups in our community by participating in complete count committees and or utilizing high-profile trusted voices to advocate on behalf of the 2020 census. Done and ordered this 21st day of May 2019 in Taylor County, Florida.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Cora.
Good morning, Madam Chair. Good morning. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen in the gallery. Good morning. Thank you for the opportunity to come and share with you. Mr. Bishop has read what our partnership is really going to look like, but this is about shaping the future of the county. We can't do that without your help. So that's why we're asking you to form a complete count committee, because it's made up of trusted voices and stakeholders in the community to help motivate, educate, and engage the population to participate and self-enumerate themselves here in the census. As we know, the census, we've been taking the census since 1790, and we embark on our 24th census here in 2020. And the census is primarily for two things, power and money. Political power, we're going to be able to, with the census number, we'll be able to draw the district lines for congressional representation, state and local representation. And then the other one is the money aspect of it. Your funding that we get for about 20, between 25 and 30 programs, federal programs, are based on the census count. The money follows the numbers, doesn't follow the need. You just passed an ordinance this morning about for transportation, for a segment of our population. That's all based on census numbers. So the more we know the folks and the characteristics of the folks that live in Taylor County, the better the outcome is going to be and the better input you're going to have and continue to build the future of our county. Why we take the census? We take it for healthcare, transportation, future roads, and projects that you're embarking on. So again, I go back to stating that the number, knowing the characteristics of our county is very important to be able to satisfy and design facilities and future needs for the residents of Taylor County. privacy and confidentiality. We do not share any information that we get from the folks that we enumerate. We, by assessors employees, cannot share any information for the rest of our lives. We take an oath or we're fined for subject to $250,000 fine or 5 years of imprisonment. The assessors did not share any information at all for 72 years and one day. All we share is the characteristics of the footprint and the geographical footprint that we have enumerated. Very important, especially now since the census is going to be changing and we're doing something very interesting. Our goal is to count everyone once, only once, and in the right place. And that means everyone who is on U.S. soil the 1st of April of 2020, regardless of status, we will attempt to enumerate. That way we can get a most accurate and complete count across the country. We're taking a different initiative with the census. That's why it's important that we have this partnership that we're about to embark on with you in our complete count committee. Because for the first time, the census is going to allow you to enumerate either by phone or online. If you're old school like me and you still want to fill out a form, you can call us. We have folks for 24 hours that are going to be able to send you a form as well. But primarily, we're trying to make to ensure that we make it as easy as possible for us to count our population. We have to count over 300 million people across the country. So we're allowing you the opportunity to self-enumerate yourself online or by phone. Someone will be able to take the census online and by phone with us. And we do that by forming what's called a complete count committee. And that is the trusted voices and stakeholders of our community that know the culture and the DNA of Taylor County, know where the people are at, what engages them, what encourages them to participate. Because if we go to knock on someone's door, they don't know who we are. They're not going to, you know, respond to us, but they will respond to you, Madam Chair, to members of the commissioners, and also the folks there in the gallery to participate in self-enumerating themselves coming up in 2020. We're using a very important tool that's called ROAM, Response Outreach Area Mapper. That identifies to us what are the areas that we believe are going to be a little bit challenging to enumerate in the count. So when we come back to train the complete count committee, we will go over in detail where in the county we feel that we have to descend on and give a more specific message to encourage the residents of the county to participate. And that is going to be based on the inventory that you already have. What events are going on in the county? We have homecoming, the county fair, you know, and be able to share the information with other residents of the county based on where they're at and what is it going to take to enumerate. So Rome tells us who's living there, whether they're single parents, if they're transients as far as renters, are they stable, what the income is, and we'll come up with a strategy with the help of the leaders in the community to be able to deliver the right message to that segment of the population. And now that you are considering passing a resolution, we ask you to please pass it. Let's get together. Let's shape the future of Taylor County as a team. We're going to be your liaison. All the information has been drafted. All we have to do is add the Taylor County flair to it and get out there and encourage the population to self-enumerate themselves. On the 20th of the 1st of April 2020, everyone who is on our soil will belong to the Taylor County as far as the numbers are concerned. And that's pretty much our next step. I'm a liaison here. My friend is Evelyn Ramirez is also here, who is in this area in Leon County. And we're going to help you craft up the necessary message to be able to get folks to encourage them to participate in the census in 2020. And we're hiring. We're hiring local folks from Taylor County to help us with this process. We start address canvassing. We're going to verify the addresses. You gave us all the addresses that are in the county. We shook them out in our big old basket, and now we have to go out and verify exactly those addresses are there. So when we start sending out the invitations, we're sending them out the addresses, and we need local folks to help us do that. And those are the folks from the county that we hire. They have anywhere from $12 to $19 an hour plus 58 cents a mile to help us with this process. And that's the first major operation, which is address canvassing, that starts in August.
Could you repeat that rate again?
$12 to $19 an hour, depending on the geographical footprint.
And how much for the
mileage? 58 cents a mile. That adds up quick. Say again, sir?
That's the federal rate.
Yes, that's the federal rate, because I think the state rate is 31.
All right. The age limit?
18, U.S. citizen, that's all we need. Retired teachers, school teachers, college students, parents, because it's a part-time studying opportunity. So you tell us how much you can work, and then we'll work around your schedule. Walk around with a little device, and we'll send you all the addresses that need to be verified for that particular day that you choose to work, and then you'll verify and send the information back. You have a question about that?
Yeah, so you sort of schedule. What I'm hearing you say is you give somebody that this is what you need to do today. Is that how it works?
Based on your availability. If you say, I can work today for 4 hours, whatever addresses need to be verified for that particular time period, we will send that information to you. The census will send the information to you. You go verify the addresses, everything's electronic. You have your tablet around, and you'll take the information and then send it back up. That's the first operation. Yes, sir.
Not in the bid.
You know, addresses. When you say addresses, what do you mean, sir?
If you said, go cut an address that you don't send.
Right, we're going to send you a block of addresses for you to go verify.
That someone is there?
No, that the building is there. The first part is the address gathering. We're verifying that if you, Santa County says we have 50,000 addresses. So now we're going to send folks to verify that there's a physical structure at that address. That's the first phase of the operation, which starts in August. And that's going to go through the end of the year. In January, we have a national night for county people experiencing homelessness. And then in February, we start what's called Group Quarter Operation, which is enumerating our universities, our correctional institutions, our hospitals, our hotels. They're going to be enumerated in February. So you'll start seeing some correspondence to make sure that we start that process as far as February is concerned. And then starting on March the 12th, you're going to get now every resident, 95% of the addresses across the country will receive an invitation to self-enumerate themselves in the census. And if we don't hear from you around the first or second week in April, we're going to send you another second notice. And by the end of April, we'll start knocking on your doors. We're going to knock on your door about 4 or 5 times between the end of April, May time frame. And then after that, if we don't get you, we're going to ask your neighbor. Now, what's interesting about this, ladies and gentlemen, is that if we exhaust all our efforts to reach out to you, and a percentage of that particular track has responded, whatever the majority of the folks that responded in that track, that's what the characteristics of that track is going to become. So if I have single parents, families, elderly, in one particular track, but the majority of the folks that participate, that respond, are just my single parents, then I'm going to think that the census is going to say that track is made up of single folks. That's why it's very important that everyone participates so that we know what the makeup is of Taylor County. So when the funding comes down, it will come down, that will match the characteristics of the county.
Okay. Do you provide the media information so that they can, help the public become aware of how
absolutely
important
absolutely
this is to Taylor County?
I'll be sharing that with Ms. Marsha and Ms. Pemberton as far as the literature, the narrative has been written. Our tagline is, we're going to count everyone once, only once, and in the right place. Another one that we're using is shape your future, start here. So we're starting here today to shape the future of Taylor County between now and the middle of next year to make sure that everyone in the county gets counted so we have a complete and accurate count. All the narrative has been pretty much written. We're just going to add now the Taylor County flair and get the stakeholders and trusted voices of the county involved in helping us get the word out. Because we can come in and be standing with a bullhorn in the corner of Main Street, but no one's going to listen to us. But I know Commissioner Page goes out there, people are going to stand and take attention. You know, Commissioner Murray,
amen,
are going to pay attention to what's going on. So we're, right now, we have over 3,200 counties across the country. We're counting a population of over 300 million people. It's the largest undertaking peacetime on earth we're going to embark on. And we could not do it without your help and your leadership. We need your leadership to be able to help us get the county. I agree. And that's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
Thank you.
Are there any other questions for Mr. Corr?
Not at this time.
In other words, you're going to provide all the information, but you want the county to do what all you actually, the county got to do. They're not going to hire anybody or put anybody out. It's all y'all going to hire all of them.
We just hired a complete count committee, which we did 10 years ago. And I, some people I see in the audience were on this committee 10 years ago. Right, Mr. Ridge, right? Remember? You and your wife were on the committee for the 2010 census. So we were...
You say so.
Oh! So, well, we'll form this committee, and then we'll ask for a commissioner to be on this committee, and then we basically help disseminate the information out to the public.
Correct. And you do that by just, we'll take a snapshot of what inventory you already have. What partnerships do you have? Who's our largest employer? What social media platforms do we have that we can help enhance the experience? So I understand that CareerSource is a partner of the area. They have a mobile unit that we could probably ask them to partner with us. So when we sit down to lay out strategy, we'll look at what inventory we have, what do we need, and who can get it for us. Some of the counties have, you know, taken some funding out to the tune of about 50 cents per person to be able to buy pens and t-shirts and billboards and stuff like that. But we're going to look at what you already have in place that we can use to leverage that relationship with the partnerships that we have already in the county. We're going to back up whatever the county does from an outreach perspective. It's going to be backed up with a national campaign starting in January.
It's going to be, it's been a year. How long have we been since we've done the national?
Ten years. 10 years. Everything between that.
Back then, they went around to every household and asked how many people live there and that kind of thing. They're going to do that again.
We're going to do that again if you don't respond. If you don't self-enumerate yourself, if that household does not give us the characteristics by their own accord, then we're going to go back after the end of April and start knocking on doors.
Okay.
So we're encouraging folks to self-enumerate themselves so that we don't have to bother you and go knocking on doors.
Okay.
And that's why we're hiring the folks in the county to help us do that. Yes, sir.
Can I ask a question? I don't know to what extent we have an illegal population, you know, across the border. I don't know if we have their need in this county, if any. But they would be included in the census office.
Everyone who's breathing and on U.S. soil the 1st of April will be counted, Commissioner.
I would think if I were an illegal, I'd be hiding from you guys.
Well, see, and that's a very valid point, Commissioner, because we're just the Snapchat. We're the big oversized camera, and all we're doing is taking a snapshot of the footage.
We're not sharing
any information, who they are, or all we're sharing is the characteristics of the footprint of our country. So, and those folks that are here that may not have the proper documentation, they're still using your services. If they live in the county, we need to count them so that you can get your fair share of funding. Right. So all we are is the takers of the numbers. And that's it. That's all we're going to do. We're not sharing that information with anyone else. Just the results.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
Anybody else?
I've heard this before. Over in all sense forward in plenty of time. When I heard it, I thought I was leery of it because I was thinking it. Same thing Mr. Page was talking about. Those that's not here. Those that you have some that won't even don't want to serve on the jury, so they don't do certain things.
Mm. No. Right.
So how do you count things?
Well, that's also a very valid question. That's where the trusted voices and stakeholders come in. That population looks up for someone for guidance. It could be their faith-based leadership. It could be someone that provides them services from other, you know, from other entities. So we need to find out who those folks are, that are those leaders and those trusted voices for that segment of the population, and encourage them and bring it down to a level where they understand. For example, we undercounted over 1 million children under 5 in 2010. And the ripple effect of that is where are a lot of our students learning right now? In makeshift classrooms, because the funding wasn't there for brick and mortar buildings. So when we bring it down to a level where people understand how it personally affects them through, you know, special programs, lunch programs, school, that is what we're hoping that will convince and motivate them to self-enumerate themselves.
Good year. It's a newspaper, right? I'm gonna make a statement that I wish you wouldn't print. But there are certain segments in the community you can go now, and you pass a person on the street, and you won't look at them. They turn their head, or they turn their body. Now, I don't know whether they people doing there's a legal activity, or they're running from the law of what. Now, how would you help them?
We go back to understanding, for example, in that particular area that you're talking about, who's the leadership there? Who's the commissioner there? Who's that trusted voice? Is it Miss Jones in the corner of that particular street? You know, Miss Smith or Mr. Smith? Who's the trusted voice? Every single segment of the population has someone that they trust. What we have to do, Commissioner, is make sure that our narrative is shaped to that particular segment. When I talk to businesses, I talk to one way. When I'm speaking to government leadership, so if I'm speaking to a person in the street that may or may not be apprehensive, I have to understand what the makeup and the DNA of that particular block is or that track so that I can come up with a specific narrative for that.
Okay. You encourage citizens to become proactive and report people who might not be willing to enumerate if that's the verb I need to use here. For example, if I know Commissioner Siegel is on these attorneys' side, and I know she hasn't been counted, should I call somebody and say, can you go check on the blade?
Instead of doing that, I would look for who is it that that person trusts and get them to convince them to participate. Because you want to kind of shy away from a negative connotation to what we're doing. All we're taking is a snapshot of our country. And at the end of the day, it's going to benefit everyone who uses the roads in Taylor County, the schools in Taylor County, or the public services in Taylor County.
We don't want to create a bureaucracy.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. I'm looking for my faith-based leaders. I'm looking for my educational leaders. I'm looking for my business leaders. I'm looking for the person down the street that everyone goes to and listens to, that may be sitting on a balcony drinking some tea. That's the person that I'm going to listen to. If I don't trust anyone else, and I trust Mr. Jones, and they tell me, you need to fill out the census because it's important to you, in whatever language that may be, Commissioner, and those are the folks that I want to engage to participate and be part of this leadership group that we're about to form.
Does your work cut?
Yes, sir, we do. We're happy about it. We're excited about it. And again, these numbers we have to live with for 10 years.
Yes.
So do you have plans to go and speak to anyone else in Taylor County?
As soon as the complete count committee is formed, and Ms. Pemberton and Ms. Marsha form the committee, and we look at the representation, what infrastructure the county is representing there, and then they will tell us, okay, we have this event here, we need to come. We have this event here, we need to talk. But once we form the complete count committee and we take a snapshot and we plan for the future, then our guidance is going to be led by that particular group, because this is your committee. You're the one that's going to determine what's going to be important and where is it that we need to deliver the Taylor County message.
Well, thank you so much.
It was my pleasure. Thank you so much.
Now, do we have a call?
Yeah, they are inside.
Yes, the cards are inside my package that I've left with you. There's also some more information there about enumerating people experiencing homelessness. If you look on the left-hand side, you'll go down and you'll see Taylor County, what your response was in 2000.
You see it. Download.
Correct. So we want to make sure that we improve that number.
Yeah.
And we improve that number.
Okay.
By all means necessary.
Do we need to approve the proclamation?
Yes, we do.
I'm moved.
So you're making a motion?
Yes, ma'am.
Yes.
I'll second.
Okay, we have a motion. We have a motion by Commissioner Dix, second by Commissioner Page. Any further discussion? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Thank you very much.
It's my pleasure. Thank you. I look forward to working with you.
Thank you. Okay.
Good luck to you.
Yes, sir.
Item 14, the board to consider appointment of a replacement commissioner to the Taylor Coastal Water and Sewer District Board of Commissioners as attended by Lynette Sentner, Taylor Coastal Water and Sewer District Office Manager. This position has been vacant since March of this year, and we have two applicants, Steve Spradley and Carol Wentworth. You're handing out the ballot?
Yes, ma'am.
And we'll just mark it and pass it down to Mr. Bishop.
Don't forget to sign it.
We put their name on it. If that helps.
I like them to sign.
Yes, sir.
You need a date on there as well.
And I'd like to say that these documents are held by our clerk in her office. And if you wish to see these, you can review them after this meeting, or you can go over to the courthouse, to her office, and view them there. Everything is covered.
You hand these to the attorney?
Yes. And while you calculate, we'll just go on to the next, is that okay with you?
Yes.
Okay, we'll come back when he's ready. Right now we'll go to county staff items number 15. The board to consider approval of new job description for on-call fire inspector and to reclassify a current on-call firefighter position as attended by the fire chief.
Good morning, everybody.
Morning.
Just a quick update on this. As we've talked in the past, we need to do a little bit more work on our fire inspections. So what we went back at the staff is to try to figure out how can we achieve that without doing, you know, costing too much and make it see how far we can get with it. So we have a vacant on-call firefighter position right now. So what we would like to do is approve this new job description for fire inspector and then reclassify that current on-call firefighter into this newly graded fire inspector. The pay grade was set off of the pay study that was already completed, so it's already in there. So we went with the base pay off of the pay plan study.
Okay, now is this a position that we've deliberately not filled, or we've been actively trying to fill it in terms of your vacant?
We've got three that are vacant right now. We just filled where we're sending out an offer letter to one person for one of them. We're going to do some more testing on one more for another position. But it was one of those we kind of balanced the need of, do we need that third firefighter versus do we need this new fire inspector? So we'll still have two on-call firefighters. So we're going to weigh out the pros and cons there. And I think it's more important to have that fire inspector. Mm-hmm. We get somebody who's still certified as a firefighter, we could still use them in that capacity as a firefighter, even though they're an inspector.
Okay. And Ms. Pemberton, you're in agreement with this?
Yes, because we already have the funding, and then I know we have the fire chief is presently can perform these inspections. We have another lieutenant who is in training to do fire inspections. So this would hopefully fill the void so we can continue to have these inspections done.
With our current funding, that gives us with the on-call position, we're funded for about 62 days worth of fire inspections. So a little over a day a week, and we can bring somebody in to help do some fire inspections.
Is there a motion to approve?
Motion.
Second.
We've got a motion by Commissioner Page, second by Commissioner Moody. Any further discussion? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion
carries. Thank you.
Item 16, the board to consider awarding bids for the rehabilitation of one home and the demolition of construction of three homes through the Community Development Block Grant, CDBG program, and consider approval of exceeding the arbitrary cost limits for the CHIP Local Housing Assistance Plan, LHMP, and the CDBG Housing Assistance Plan due to the rising cost of construction as attended by Jamie Boothby, Grants Coordinator.
This is actually to award this for the rehabilitation of one home and the demolition and construction of three homes through the SHIP program, and then three homes demolition and CDBG.
We received the bids at our May 6th meeting, and at that time we all declared that whether we were related or not, that any of us were. The bid committee has recommended the following bid awards: the SHIP rehabilitation, Carbajal Cook to Certified Roofing and Construction Inc. for $25,000, SHIP Demolition and Construction, Caitlin Holmes to Jerry Walters Construction Inc. for $79,950, Thomas Mixon to Jerry Walters Construction Inc. for $84,950, Laura Campbell to J.G. Parker Enterprises Inc. for $95,888, CDBG Demolition and Construction to James O'Neill to J.G. Parker Enterprises Inc. for $79,888, William Walter Davis to J.G. Parker Enterprises Inc. for $95,888, Gerald Faulkner to J.G. Parker Enterprises Inc. for $96,888. So, is there a motion to approve these bids to the ones that I just called out?
Motion to approve.
I think the motion is to say and to approve exceeding the SHIP.
All right, my motion is to approve and to approve exceeding the limits. And I'd like to discuss.
Sure.
I think that if I recall the last several months that we've done this, cost of construction, that we've always had to exceed the limits. I'm asking, is it permissible for us to change the limits?
We can.
Rather than each time having to exceed the limits.
Just so you know, these are actually our last three homes with the CDBG program. We'll be closing out this grant. So the next time that we apply and we do a new housing assistance program, if the construction costs are still high like they are now, we can change that amount. And we can amend our housing assistance plan for the SHIP program to change our costs.
At the first opportunity, I think we probably want to take a look at that. Mm-hmm. That's my comment.
Okay. When will the next program come into effect?
If we are awarded our SHIP money, we should be getting that in August for the next coming year, because we're actually having encumbered all of our funds to this date.
We have?
Yes. CDBG, we will have to finish these things up and close out the grant, and we'll have to wait probably towards the end of next year. We'll be able to apply for the CDBG grant again.
Okay, I know someone that has a mobile home, it's in the city, and it is. They really need some assistance. When, what program would they come under in?
Yes.
In the city ordinance would be SHIPs, but the SHIP program does not allow us to do anything on mobile homes.
So there's no help for this. Yeah, why is it divided into, I mean, why doesn't it cover city and county? Why is
SHIP does cover city and county. CDBG is only county. They don't do anything for the city on it.
City property, city and
they can apply for it. Yeah.
So what can this person do?
Minor economic council.
They used to do a weatherization program and actually do work to mobile homes, and you didn't even have to own it. You could be a renter. But I don't think that they would
have a little help. I mean, a little help.
they need to come, you know, the board advertises 15 parcels of land with 15 bids. Only got 3 bids. Is, do the people who apply for those programs have to own the property? Or can you look at some of these tracts the county's got, because we didn't sell, they're in the county's name, is using one of those lots to build a ship or a CDG home or something?
Well, right now, for our demolition and construction, they are required to actually be a homeowner, and have a home that can be demolition. But, we have talked about the next time that we do our ship housing plan to possibly consider including mobile homes for demolition and construction, because we do have a lot of applicants in the city who call us and they have mobile homes.
Well, because the people that I know, the man, he works sometimes 7 days a week, and he works really hard, a real honest person. His wife has some pretty severe health issues, and they're doing the very best they can, but their home is almost not livable, but there's nothing else they can do. These are the kind of people that are working, good, hard-working, honest people that really need help. And just because they live in the city, to me, is just not an excuse not to help them. So you're in a position, if you know, would go back for people like that, if you need me to help them speak, I don't mind doing that. These people need help, and there may be other people like them.
And there is, and, like, and I said, we have considered changing the plan to include the mobile homes, because I can't tell you how many people I've had call me and they have a mobile home and they can't do anything.
Yeah, well, they shouldn't be excluded, because they live in a mobile home because that's all that they can afford. And so, any way that I can help or this board can help enforce that, then please let us know.
Okay. Can I ask you a question? The city don't participate, they won't do it, they're not doing it now?
The city has applied, I think, before for CDBG grants, but it's been to revitalize the downtown. Mm-hmm. Not the
Howard.
Yes. Maybe several. Did they?
Yeah. O'Hanlon subdivision is one of those two. CDBG, CD54, I got them.
So they have several different programs you can apply for, but I think they mainly do it for revitalizing the downtown and infrastructure.
I think we had a motion in a second. I don't remember who it was. We don't get it. Okay, so it's not
been started speaking.
Okay.
Well, I'll make the motion to approve this list of applicants. Second. And that also approved the seating limits. Is that what we need?
Yes.
And I'll second that motion.
I think Commissioner Hicks will be.
Okay,
so we have a motion by Commissioner Page, a second by Commissioner Hicks. Any further discussion? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Thank you. Are we ready to go back to number 14?
Ready.
Yes, the count is Steve Bradley.
Steve Spradley? Okay, is there a motion to appoint Steve Spradley to the Taylor Coastal Water and Sewer District Board of Commissioners?
I make motion.
Motion, okay, who's second?
Second.
We have a motion by Commissioner Murphy, second by Commissioner Gibbs. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Item 17. The board should consider approval of the cooperative agreement between the county and the Federal Railroad Administration, FRA, for a grant in the amount of $8,671,515.50 for the railroad rehabilitation project as agenda by Melody Cox, grant director.
Melody could not be with us. She has been working part-time on this project remotely,
And this is to approve basically the grant agreement with FRA. Our attorney will be speaking later on in the meeting about the funding agreement between the board and GFRR to facilitate this project. This is for the actual grant agreement. And if the board approves this, then Commissioner Fiegel will log into a portal, approve the grant, and we will start moving the project forward.
Is your recommendation that we approve this?
Yes, sir. Right.
You concur, Mr. Bishop? This is the right thing to do?
Yes, sir.
Ordinary vote for something that involves $8 million, and let's ask some questions.
Right.
So that's not.
Right, but this I read that carefully, and this will not cost the county any money.
If the funding agreement is approved.
Between Georgia and Florida Railway and Georgia Pacific.
No, ma'am. Not Georgia Pacific is not a partner in this, and we need to correct our language on this. So the agreement is between Georgia Florida Rail and the Board of County Commissioners to hold us harmless and not to utilize any of our funding for this project. So we are basically the pass-through agency for FRA.
There are two agreements today, okay? So we're mixing them right now. The first agreement is with, for the grant, which is $8 million, almost over 85, over $8,671,513.50. Okay, that's the grant, okay? The second agreement is an agreement with Georgia Florida Railroad, which we've explained before is what we call a pass-through agreement. And that's the one I've been dealing with Mr. Williams with, who is an attorney from Holland & Knight in Jacksonville. Holland & Knight. Okay. All right. So, the first agreement I sent him, and y'all have seen the copies where I wrote a letter saying that, one of the things was that it said that we would do it in good faith. Well, I'm making them do it in good faith. And then we had several questions from our grants coordinator, Melanie Cox, and I sent that to Mr. Williams, and Mr. Williams got a lady by the name of Ms. Bosco, I believe it was.
Yes.
Mary Beth Bosco, also in the D.C. office, she responded to it saying that what we're doing here is legal. And what it is all we are is a conduit or a pass-through, and they have agreed in the agreement, if you look at what I asked them to do, if there's a mistake, they hold us harmless with regard to that. Hopefully there won't be any mistakes. I'm doing my thing right now. What number it is? What number is
22?
Might as well do it now. Okay. So let me just read you what I wrote to LaWanda and Annie Mae on May the 6th. Dear Annie Mae and LaWanda, as you are aware, I've been corresponding with Mr. Scott Williams, attorney of Holland Knight in Jacksonville, who represents GFRR, that's Georgia Florida Railroad, and has amended the agreement with GFRR in Taylor County. Pursuant to a letter I sent Mr. Williams on 4/4/19, for your convenience, I enclose another copy. Mr. Williams sent me the enclosed copy attached dated Wednesday, May 1st, 2019, with an amended agreement. Mr. Williams kindly made the changes that I requested. I am by copy of this letter to Mr. Williams advising him to send me a clean agreement, and I am requesting that you put the agreement on the agenda for the next regular meeting for the board to consider. If you have a question, let me know. I've been looking for that clean agreement in my file. And what I mean by a clean agreement, the agreement they sent me was underlined and it was red, with the changes and so forth. So I wrote down his phone number because I looked and I haven't gotten that clean agreement yet. And so I was going to call him once I get through talking to y'all and say, you know, email me the clean agreement. Then on May the 15th, I wrote Luana and I says, as you recall, Ms. Melanie Cox raised some questions. I in turn sent them to Mr. Scott Williams with the firm of Holland and Knight in Jacksonville, Florida. Please find and close an email he sent me on May 14, 2019. Also, I received a letter of opinion from attorney Mary Beth Bosco, also of Holland and Knight, Washington, D.C. office. Please review this and send it to Melanie. Frankly, I think the questions are answered. Thank you, and I hope you're doing fine. So I think the questions were answered by Ms. Bosco, who deals with this kind of thing every day. Of course, everyone who's in the county, in our staff, our attorney, get nervous about $8 million, you know, like I told you when this first came up. So that's why we did all the questioning and why Melanie did the questioning and then we got the response. The long and the short of it is, if he sends me the clean copy and emails it to us, my recommendation is to sign it and let's get rolling with, pardon the pun, with this railroad track being done from Adel to Perry. So I think, you know, in the abundance of caution, you know, I've used that term for many, many years, but I just think that this is something that that we're going to be okay, and if we're not, I'm going to leave town, but I think we're going to be okay, and it is a boon to everyone in our community. I mean, I can't foresee too many people objecting to that situation. So with that in mind, I'm going to excuse myself and call him and ask him to email it to my office, and then I would get it to you, and you will sign it if y'all approve it.
Okay.
Did
you say
yes.
Yes. Have a plain copy of it.
I don't have it. See.
So then, do you need to take this number 22 so you can get that plain copy?
Well, that's why I'm going to call him right now. And tell him to email it to my office, and then we'll bring it down. So you need to vote to sign it contingent on getting a clean copy. That would be your motion there on that part. But you got two things to do now. First one is the grant. The second one is the agreement with Georgia Florida Railroad. And I'm gonna, if y'all excuse me for a minute, I'm gonna see if I can call Scott Williams.
We appreciate you being diligent with this. Thank you.
It's scary.
I know.
And, okay. And if I may just take this opportunity just to, so everyone remembers, we have many moving pieces with this project, but our role is to execute the grant agreement, and then our staff will work within the grants portal to request reimbursement for invoices and things like that. We are currently advertising for CEI services. That is the construction oversight and grant oversight, our boots on the ground when the track work starts, and to protect us and to protect the project. Georgia Florida Rail will be hiring the track work contractor. That's what some of the conversation was about, to make sure that we are within the CFR, the federal regulations, by allowing GFRR to do that. So so we all will be working together very closely to ensure that this is a 50-50 grant, that Georgia Florida Rail is reimbursed, so that we will be the pass-through for all the funds that are incurred in this project, if that helps.
Ms. Kim.
Yes, sir.
When I was in Washington, Congressman Dunn's office was telling us that he was responsible for this $8 million plan.
Yes, sir.
Okay, so we need to give a kudos to Congressman Dunn's office.
Yes, and for this. Mr. Landon is here.
Okay, yeah, I appreciate it.
Yes.
Okay.
So this project is starting to pick up steam. And but we're moving along, which is why we're all anxious. This is new to us. It has a lot of moving pieces. It's quite complicated, but I would say that we are, you know, we are ready to embark on this project. So in June, we should receive the bids for the CEI services, and that will be something that the board has control over. And then it's just a matter, once the project gets started, I think it will move very quickly. But considering we've been talking about it for 2 years, really.
Yes, yes. I'd like to give you an opportunity to come forward and say something.
Yes, ma'am.
We appreciate you being here.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you for having me. My name is Landon Hoffman. I'm the regional director for Congressman Neil Dunn. We did have part, major part in getting this through USDOT. Of course, Congressman Dunn is willing to do anything he can for you guys up in D.C. And that was the major fight that we did for this. We would love to come down here when it is the final and take a picture of you guys and do this fight. And he will always be here to support Shepherd County, anything that you guys need. I'm right here in Tallahassee, and I come over here frequently. And we'd love to, we want to be there for you as your voice in Washington, D.C. This is a good example of good stuff. So look forward to working for you.
We certainly appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you.
Very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, so are there no other questions?
I didn't get him on the phone. I left a message on his voicemail. I'm leaving my phone on. He calls me back, but I did tell him in the message to email it to me right away. So,
okay. Well, that's all.
When I get it, you know, I'll get it to
okay.
Rwanda and the Sandy Mae.
Thank you.
So if my phone rings, don't kick me out.
Okay, so for right now, is there a motion to approve the cooperative agreement between the county and the Federal Railroad Administration, FRA, for a grant in the amount of $8,671,513.50.
Second.
Okay,
and
we
then have done whatever we need to do, but we should try.
We have a motion by Commissioner Dent, second by Commissioner Murphy. Any further discussion? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion carries. I think what I'd like to do, we'll just wait on 22. If they haven't called, then perhaps what we'll do is we'll do a motion that's contingent on. So, okay. Item number 18. The board to consider reappointment of two members to the Taylor County Planning Board as attended by Danny Griner, building official. The two that wish to remain are Dominic Pickford and Earl Ketchum. Is there a motion to reappoint these two members?
May I have a question?
Yes.
Did anybody check their attendance? Did they attend regularly the one?
As far as I know, this is a recommendation by Danny.
I move we approve the recommendation. Our building official, Mr. Dryer, and report.
I see
two individuals have been named.
Okay, we have a motion by Commissioner Page, second by Commissioner Gimps. Any further discussion? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Item 19. The board to further discuss solid waste operations as agenda by Gary Wombaugh, Environmental Services Director. Yes, sir.
On the paperwork I sent, we're just doing a follow-up, which you guys asked for. And basically, I did some assessments, and you can see that A through I. And I did do the cost of the scales. And the scales, it varies on what you're looking for up here. They've got above ground frame type around 65 grand, and then in ground concrete, and they can run up to 110. But with this here, what I'm trying to get across, if we go up on the assessment, the only thing I need you guys to think about is on the loads, how many can a person bring into the site per day? That's what's killing us too.
Okay, first of all, would you, if you don't mind, would you, because I thought that was very interesting, the survey that you did of other counties.
Okay.
Would you bring that for, just so that everybody's reminded what everybody else does?
Okay, this is assessment. I just called around trying to get people or counties kind of similar, close to us or whatever. Franklin County, they take household only, $272.76. That's what it says, a year. City of Perry's, $228, household only. They do curbside, and I think they do a monthly pickup in the city. Calhoun County is $227, household only. They do curbside. Madison County is $220, household only. Waukulla is $196, household only, curbside. Columbia County is $193, household only. Liberty County is $192, household only. Dixie County is $180, household only. Jefferson County is $175, was $224, and they ran out of money the last 2 years, so I think she said they're probably going back to $200 on that. Hamilton County, they charge by the 100 pounds, it's $3.50, and we're at $140, and Suwannee County's at $130 with household only. And the majority, I think all of these only take household only. And they do have options like scales at a facility when they come in there if they have any other debris, but the majority only take household only.
Okay, thank you for that. That's good. I want to ask you, Ms. Pemberton, what do we have to do if we decide, say, we want to go to $200? Most of these people are over 200. What do we have to do? I know that we right now can go to, we could raise it to 154.
There's a cap of 154 per our ordinance. The fees are set by resolution, if I'm not incorrect, Mr. Conrad, but to go up that high, I think you would need to amend your ordinance.
Okay.
Is that correct?
Yes, ma'am.
Because we're lagging way behind.
And my understanding was that when this ordinance was passed, which was over 10 years ago, maybe 12, that the initial thought was to set it at 140 for it to only be household, to stop C&D and probably vegetative debris, and every year maybe go up a little bit on that assessment till you got to the 154. And I don't believe it's been raised since then.
It's been raised.
And that's been probably 12 years?
Well, we've got a lot of issues to consider. Gary just had one question of how many times we're going to let somebody come. And if we're talking about household garbage, they're not going to come one time a day, so I'm sure you were referring to limbs and things like that. And I know last meeting, my concern was that, just like Mr. Ridgway was talking, if you're cleaning up your yard and you got a few palmetto limbs down or you know, you take that, I don't want to have to charge people for that. If they cut down a 75-foot pine tree or a 100-year-old tree, then to me that's different, but that does impact our bottom line, right?
It does. I think we can, if we decide to charge at the roll-off sites, we can work in a clause on that to make it look like if you pull up there with a pickup and it's full of leaves and a little bit of yard debris. I think that should be excluded. I don't even think we should charge for any of that. I'm talking about the guy that's bringing in C&D and just bringing in a truckload of limbs higher than the cab. That's what we need to look at. And you're right, the person that's bringing in the come out of and all that, they're not impacting this like, that's just normal stuff to me. And if we decided to just exclude the pickup size or just look at the trailer size or something like that, we could work around that if you think about charging at the roll-off side. I think, like, they clean up their yard once a week, that ain't killing us.
Well, my concern, too, and I think the concerns of others, is charging at the roll-off site. I see a lot of major concerns with that. Lots of, you don't want your roll-off attendants handling money for safety reasons, among others. And then if you, we discussed if we have some sort of ticket and it goes to the clerk's office, and then that puts a greater load on them to handle all of that. And so I don't know the answer. I'm just telling you my concerns. We want it as easy for your department, and we don't want to burden the clerk. Now, I know we talked about a lot of the C&D. Somehow or another, we need to make sure that the public knows that they can rent these dumpsters. And then once they rent the dumpster, then they take it to Greenville. Is that the way it goes?
What it is, there's environmental waste at Live Oak, and there's Waste Pro here. If they're tearing down a building or something like that, they can rent these, and they come pick them up and haul them, and they charge them.
Okay, yeah. Okay.
The thing we're having trouble with is people are trying to get in the sites to not have to pay for the containers and all that. That's where we run into. When they bring in multiple loads, let's say on a Saturday, we clean the site up for the weekend, and let's say by Sunday, 10 o'clock, a person's brought in 5 or 8 loads of debris from a building or whatever, then I have to send a truck driver out and we're paying overtime on that. Mm-hmm. And this doesn't happen every week, but it happens a lot. Every couple of weeks we have to do this. Sometimes I get called on Saturdays and Sundays, but I'd say every other week we're getting called out. And it ain't people just bringing in normal stuff. It's we're getting slammed by one person usually sometimes.
And your suggestion then, to fix that?
Well, I don't know, and I'm throwing this out, if we go up on assessment, that's going to generate more money, of course, but we're still not controlling the roll-off side as far as how many loads. If that same person's slipping in there because they got a card and they say they're not a contractor, we can't prove it, but they're bringing in multiple loads, I don't know how to stop that unless we charge them and make them have to pay for what they are generating. I don't have that answer.
And are you, and I know you've given this a lot of thought, are you suggesting that they pay the roll-off attendant, or how, what is your suggestion?
I think like we did the ticket thing. I don't know, and maybe in a prior meeting you said you think we can make that work.
Well, I don't know, because I don't know what you're thinking about. How do you think about doing it? But I would hope that y'all, this board, would never go back to collecting fees that roll off.
No,
you know, we had a problem. The audit was criticized us every year. We got an audit for
I don't want to handle money.
So you don't want to roll off site attendance to handle the money.
Well, my idea on the ticket thing was that we generated at the roll off site, and it's just check wherever and they get the information. We take it to the office, and we do it like we did code enforcement when we were running it. We do a master sheet, and we turn it in to Anthony with the tickets. That's what we did in the past, and I think the code enforcement worked out pretty well when we did that.
So you run that through code enforcement, because if you run it through the court system, you don't get used to it. So you'll have to run it through code enforcement. So we would need to sit down and look and see what kind of workload it's going to cause for us to do it. Because if you have that person that carries a large load of debris for the roll-off side, and that roll-off attendant's going to say, you can't dump that because you have to pay. You've got to have a way to give him a ticket, and he's got so many days to bring that and that ticket. The copy would need to come to us.
It would.
So we would know that.
We send a master sheet with the tickets, and we would do that thing.
It's just something that has to be worked out to see how much work there is involved in intellectual.
Yeah, and you know, with the code enforcement with the boat ramp, that's real cut and dry. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you don't have a sticker, you get a ticket and it costs this much. Our situation with this, it's a little more subjective, but it needs to be.
I think we could structure it where if we have to take some of the workload from Annie Mae, and when I say that, if she says, well, we don't have the time to generate this part, or can you help mail this out, or what can you do? I think we can help her with that. Now, it doesn't mean we down the road we may have to tweak this a little bit to make it work. I think it's workable. I think it's going to take a lot of effort initially to get it up and running. I think if we got it running, I think it'll flow pretty well. And like I say, the biggest thing is I do not want to handle any kind of money or anything like that. That's crazy. I think if we can work it this way and look at if we do this, come back in 3 months, 6 months, and just see how it is working. If it ain't, we can pull the plug on and do something else. I mean,
yes. Well, I'm gonna let the other board members speak, but I know you've spent an enormous, our whole staff has spent an enormous amount of time on this, and I appreciate what you've done. And let's try to get it as close to being as good as it can be to begin with.
Yeah,
and we may have to come back and tweak it, but you know that the less we have to do that, the better it is.
Absolutely.
People say, you said that, now you're saying this, and now you know how. So I'm done. Anybody else?
I'll go ahead and stick my neck out and tell yourself where I am. I've done a lot of time here, just like you have, and discussed some of my thoughts with Miss Anime. Probably at an inappropriate time, 9 o'clock at night, I'm texting. I know this wonderful revelation. First of all, I think we all recognize that in solid waste, we've got to generate some more revenue, or else we've got to reduce the services. I am not for going back just to household garbage at the roll off sites, because for, 15 years or more, our citizens have gotten accustomed, and Mr. Ridgway says, to carrying their yard trash there. If you've got an old couch or an old broken chair, you can take it to your roll-off site, pitch it over there. Haven't been charging. I think the simplest thing to do with the less, you know, adverse reaction from the citizenry is to increase the solid waste assessment. Which I'm willing to do that, a reasonable number. Keep the services basically the same. I do not have the right answer to what you do with people who bring in multiple loads of C and D, mainly house demolitions material. That's where most of that's coming from, the multiple loads.
And that's coming in and yard debris. We're getting hit by both sides, yard debris and that. But also, like, let's say a mother or father pass away and their kids come in and they clean the house out. Like, one time we ended up with like 12 mattresses, you know, and these people have. And that's what we're up against. The multiple loads is killing them.
If you don't provide this service for the benefit of the whole community and the county, what we're going to have is a spillover effect. Mm-hmm. And these folks, rather than to rent that $500 or $600 to rent that can that you have put in your yard to throw all that stuff in, and it can't be incidentally higher than the top of the can, and they make you take some of it off or charge you double. You're going to wind up with this debris, mattresses, refrigerators, construction debris, scattered all over this county on the shoulder of our highways. And all over the woods, it's going to be an eyesore. So, to solve the whole matter, if we'll increase the assessments to a certain point, you can do the numbers for us. In addition, we need to deal with the RV situation. I don't know what this answer is. Right now, the RVs pay one-third of the $140, which is already very, very, very low. Pointed out, every RV has got to get to
keep you just like everybody
else. You wouldn't believe this, but I've had citizens who called me recently and said, the answer to this thing is charge RVs just like you charge a house.
Yeah.
Go on and let's do it. You're going to have 200 people who are going to complain about it. And if you don't do anything, you're gonna have 250 complaint about it. So go ahead and do what's the right thing. So, I don't have an answer what to do with multiple loads. Go ahead. How many of these do you have?
A bunch.
A bunch?
A bunch.
Well, you...
A bunch.
That goes back to the scale deal. We can't afford to buy, pay $110,000 for how many roll-off sites? We got eight?
Nine.
Nine? I'm not for spending $1 million to buy nine sets of scales to weigh it out there. It's just not, that's just not a good expenditure of taxpayer money, my opinion. And I think you're probably there. And if you say, we're going to buy two sets of scales, we're going to put one in Steam Hatching and one in Shady Grove, well, that's not fair to the rest of us in the county. You got to haul it one way or the other. So the idea is we've got these multiple sites. To me, it's not the answer. I mean, if we were rich, that'd be a great answer. So it's a tough decision, but the bottom line is it's our responsibility as a board is to make solid waste whole, or else cut the services, and I don't want to see the basic services cut. Now, if we were to consider household garbage and yard waste, it just, you say we don't take any CD, then you go back to this problem about there going to be nothing in the woods and on the highways. So to me, that doesn't meet our needs. Building system. I don't want us to go into the building system and create a whole new bureaucracy and have to hire five people to collect and do all the invoices. The simplest way for me is just to increase the fee enough that you make us whole. So you have to come back each year during the budget year and ask for another $50,000 for tipping fees. That would be simpler on your people, I think, at the roll-off site. Our citizens would better understand it. They're not going to like any increase in fees, but the documentation is here, it speaks to itself. You know, they're already terribly low. So, I ran along enough, Madam Chair. I've kind of got my mind made up that we've got to do something, and I'm willing to take the hard look at increasing the fees to some extent.
I concur. Anybody else?
I'm just you, Malcolm, on that. So we've got to do something.
We've got to do something.
We can't keep going in the hole. The only thing that bothers me about what Gary is saying is that multiple load business, when you got somebody that's going to tear down three chicken houses for $140 and get every piece of them chicken houses to our dumpster, and then we have to pay $40 a ton in at the landfill, it's just... Even if we go up on sale, it's not going to take care of stuff like that. So we got to have a handle on. I want to go up on it where we can afford to do it, but I want to get a handle on that multiple load business. And how's the best way to do that?
That's the thing I'm wrestling with against. Multiple loads. Work that with solid. The one, if you don't any creative thinking on my suggestion, that I had one night about when you come and get your stuff, that you get. Say 10 little tickets.
Yeah,
that allows you 10 opportunities during the year to visit the,
yes,
the CD.
Yes. And if we could quantify that into, you know, a load or a trailer or whatever.
One trailer and one truck load.
Right.
That takes one of your tickets.
Yes.
And then next month, you reach your little envelope, your glove compartment, and you take off another load. Or if you want to use them all 10 in one weekend. But that would limit it. Because they're going to show up, and I ain't got my tickets.
And it's still going to go in the woods.
And it's still going to go in the woods. Or they're going to call their commission, because they wouldn't let me dump it, because I lost my tickets.
That seems like too much.
Too much
passport. What if
we had one site, for instance, my site down at Carlton Cemetery? If we set it up, one site with a scale to take all the C&D. I mean, people in Shady Grove can drive it. If they're going to pay at my site, they could drive to Greenville, even if they could come to Paris. You know,
I'm not, for me, I'm not interested in scales, but I want to hear from other two commissioners.
Go ahead.
Okay. What I think the situation to solve this issue, is a pay-to-play program, which Gary's come up with. If we put the responsibility over on the taxpayer, and then a commercial person comes in and dumps their debris, so you're saying that I'm going to be able to dump a ton of debris for $150? Okay. So that's putting excessive pressure on the taxpayer. If a person is going to conduct a business, they're going to pay to play. If you're going to dispose of any kind of material. So the $143, I believe it is, the assessment we're in. That is for household goods. Okay. Now, if I'm going to pay taxes, pay to have my garbage disposed, why should I pay for commercial activity, for them to profit off of commercial activity? The pay-to-play program is the way to go. This saved Miami-Dade County. Look it up. Pay-to-play. If we're going to raise taxes, let's do it for the children, or let's do it for the first responders. Because that benefits the community. But if we don't charge pay-to-play, the burden of the responsibility and the burden is going to go on the taxpayer. And that's going to create a big situation here. So I'm not for raising taxes at all, unless it's for first responders or the children. If you pay to play, that's going to solve that problem. Question I have for Andy May, how many employees do you have in the clerk's office?
About 23.
We should be able to handle this.
Not necessarily not. You know, yeah, I was running 20, for...
23, you said?
Yeah, well, that's in my whole department.
Understood.
A lot of those court people, they didn't handle the start.
Okay, so
the only people that can handle it will be the recording part downstairs and those three people.
Three people. So out of 20 people, only three people are going to be able to pick up that work.
If you didn't get into the finance people, that's the record. That's where we do the budget stuff. And we also collect them. So all of them go these with collect.
And you're fluid in those departments. Are you finding any discrepancies? Are they having issues collecting that one?
No, because we have spread that.
But that's not, if I can interject, this is a totally different volume, because the animal, just to explain the San Diego role with animal control, that's strictly for fees and fines for animal control. And I don't know how many of those do you think are generated a month?
See, I don't know, because the spaying and neutering, they have to come and pay those fees and all four.
The adoption fees.
Right,
and
adoption fees, all that.
And the fines.
We collect all that.
Right.
But see, you've got to look at this in another way, too. If you have somebody that takes a loan there, and you give him a document to bring to us to pay, say, what happens if you don't pay? Mm-hmm. And then you don't pay, and 2 months from now, he comes with another loan. There's got to be a list of those people who don't pay sent out. I've got a deal right now with the Boat Ramp Foundation. The man is giving us the devil because he parked his truck and there was a trailer at the boat ramp, and he's saying, I can't breathe, and he had a boat on my trailer. And he's refusing to pay for that kid. Because I didn't see him take that boat off.
You better start taking pictures.
Well, I did when we were running it. When I was running the boat ramp, I took pictures of everything, even the windshield where they couldn't say. And I would get the call, the guy said, my ticket was hanging on the mirror. And I go, you know I got a picture, right? And it was clipped.
Well, they're doing that. But if that man has unloaded that boat
right,
and is out in the Gulf fishing, you can't, he's saying you can't prove that I had a boat on my truck. I might have just parked there.
Commissioner Dance.
Word of it. Well, I hear you talking about multiple loads. What if people get this bunch of throw away, they got multiple loads?
What you got is the people that were getting nailed by is the guy that says he's not a contractor, he's just cleaning up.
family pay me to come clean up.
Oh, I'm just cleaning up.
So shed cleanouts.
And Carlton, they get slammed.
Shed cleanouts, people cutting down trees, people tearing down houses, or chicken houses or barns. They just, they load it up and they'll bring load after load after load, hot tubs, you know, and if we don't take it, then our roll-off site attendants are faced with very angry citizens who typically, you know, they'll end up dumping.
And the people who are doing this, over the years, they re-involve more because they figured out the system, how to make it work. If they are, when I say a contractor, you got some large contractors in town that they are contractors. That's what they do every day. These guys may work a job part time or whatever, then they clean up debris and stuff. Let's say somebody drops a bunch of trees and they come and clear out, cut some timber. They don't want to have to clean the mess up. They'll hire this guy here for $12 an hour and he'll come out there with a trailer and his pickup and work there for a month, just cleaning out.
Hauling off.
Hauling it off, and we end up with the debris. And you can drive by and talk to the roll-off attendants, and they'll tell you up front, you know, how hard it is to monitor that. Like, I think the other day, Harrison Blue, we dropped a container, and the guy ran to Osceola hauling another container, and they came in and filled up the limb container before he got back. The same guy.
Same guy.
Same guy.
Did you have anything?
That's 40 yards.
Yes, ma'am, I just don't understand how one person or two people can sabotage the whole system.
And
we can't catch them and do something about it. Now, if you're gonna bring multiple loads, you need to pay for it. Because that is money being transferred. He's not doing it for on GP group with him,
no.
Now we know that, so if you're smart enough to see him, you're smart enough to charge him.
I followed him, this guy in particular, it's been a couple of years ago, and because I got a call from the roll-off tenant, yeah. And he was about to blow a head gasket. He says, hey, Gary, this is just bizarre. So I got there and I followed him in my own truck. He was in the city limits tearing down a whole house.
Yeah.
And I just pulled in there and talked to him. I said, you're going to have to get a container. And he was pretty vocal with me, but I said, we just can't, you know, can't do that. And that's one out of 500 I probably stopped and, you know, was able to handle. But he's in the city tearing down a building and hauling it to the county.
Did he have a car?
No, this is before that.
Oh,
okay. This is about 4 or 5 years.
So it looks like to me then that we're looking at two options. We're looking at one option that would be simplified. Y'all know the numbers from the past few years. We've seen them. And you know what it would take to keep it simple to raise that fee that would cover that plus some more because you've got equipment that needs to be replaced. That's the simple way. Then you've got another option where you still raise the fee, but then if somebody comes in with, when it's obvious that they're tearing down a house, or they cut down a 75-foot pine tree or oak tree, then you charge for that, and it goes through the clerk. So it seems like to me that's the two options that we're considering.
Or you could prepay for as Commissioner Page.
Well, I don't know the prepay idea. As Commissioner Page pointed out, folks are going to lose their little prepay coupons or whatever. Mm-hmm. That's just a thought I had. Mm-hmm. Now, what about this year? If we increase the fee to cover our costs, and we still continue to take household garbage, and we still continue to take a reasonable amount of yard debris, trailers, and we continue to take miscellaneous stuff, a mattress every now and then, you know, a load. And then you don't start that ticketing until you bring the second load. Would that work?
It may, but what they got pretty creative. They will travel to another site. When we got a guy bringing in multiple loads, we figured out his contractor. I had the roll-off attendant call the multiple sites because he's going to try another site.
He's going to try another site. You start there.
He will, especially in town because we got Harrison Blue.
Yeah.
They're pretty, they've got this figured out now. Trust me.
What if, Gary, what if you had one site now set up with an individual there to make change and collect the money and have a scale? You could, one site in town or wherever that they could go to, and you had an individual there every day, 7 days a week, to take the money and make change. That would simplify all of it. They wouldn't have to send it to anybody. They wouldn't have to, you know, there's stores all over town to make change. I mean, you got to trust somebody to make change.
What we could do, if you're looking at that, you need to set up two sites, one in Steam Hatchie, because that's, we get a lot of volume there, and Carlton. Shady Grove needs to move. They can just go on and I'll sell it or whatever there, or come into town. And if you did the scale system and set that site up for that, you could make that work.
That would eliminate all the riffraff and having to follow people and worry about what they're doing. It would make it fair to the taxpayers. Like Sean said, there's no sense in a man paying $140, but he's paying, you know, he's having to pay for all these other people that's tearing down ticket houses and housing, you know. And that just seems like a simple way to set it up, and one in Perry.
And a lot of the other counties that you guys got, none of them take anything but household within sites. They do have satellite sites where they do take debris and stuff, and they do charge Live Oak and all of them. And their fees are pretty extreme over there, but he told me when they were getting, years ago, when they were doing like we were taking everything, he said that they were going through the same, what we're going through, the pain. He said that once they put the scale in and set it up, I said, do you get a lot of debris and stuff like that? He says, not really. He says, then people are going to burn in your yard, and you will get the occasional C&D couches and all that. He says, but it did die down a lot.
You wouldn't even have to have a scale if you had somebody there, a man brought four tires in there, discharging $3 a tire.
I could do that.
And let him go on about
it. I could set the system up where we wouldn't need a scale and just do the...
But you got to have somebody dependable there 7 days a week.
You know, not just that, just so everyone understands that if we go back to taking cash at any roll-off site, that is, I don't think our auditor wanted us to do that, and I know that, and I understand that, but deposits have to be made every day. We cannot hold cash. And so there would have to be some type of mechanism for deposits to be made nightly, and then there's the issue with the employee taking the funds to the bank and dropping, you know, preparing the deposit and dropping it off.
Other businesses do it all over town. At the end of the day, they fill out the deposit slip and they put it in the night deposit.
I want to say I am not for roll-off attendants taking in money for our audit purposes, for safety purposes. People are robbing people now for $10 to go buy a drug. So I am not in favor of roll-off attendants taking money. I'm not in favor of if Mr. Stan or whoever, if you pick up your yard, you say you had a lot of wind this weekend, and you have a real wooded lot, or a couple of acres, or whatever, and if we increase the fee, I'm not for having to pay extra for that. But, you know, again, if it's evident that they're tearing down a house, or a barn, or trees, that is different. But not just your regular limbs, and take it once a year, twice you cut your bushes back, and you trim up your trees at home. I'm not for charging for that, or roll-off attendants taking money. That's my stand.
I stand the same place.
Ms. Anna just made a point that we couldn't do it anyway. Couldn't collect the check.
Well, the auditors won't let know. What I'm talking about is that you got to separate those duties. Right. They criticize me about that, so I have the people upstairs that collect money. put it in a bag, and somebody in the basement buys the salt bag. You got to separate. You can't let the same person collect the money and then the box.
What you, you know, what we could do is we could increase our fees to where you guys tell us this would, this amount would cover it, plus give us some extra based off of history. Like Gary said, and 3 or 6, to keep evaluating it all along. And if you see that it's getting to the point that that we're not making enough, you know, to cover our expenses, then we may have to come back and say, okay, either you have to raise the fee again, which everybody has to pay, or you have to start charging in some way for people and let the public know that, you know, this is a trial basis. If you turn down a chicken house and you abuse us, we're going to have to come back and everybody's going to have to pay.
If the assessment was raised to 154, my understanding would that would generate roughly $100,000.
That's not enough.
That is a step in the right direction.
Step.
Coupled with leasing vehicles, leasing our heavy equipment instead of buying outright, and you know we are depending on our 1 cent funds to do that because we're not generating enough revenue to buy or really even lease heavy equipment. If we start down this path by at least raising the assessment, that would generate revenue so the department maybe could stand on its own. That would be a step in the right direction.
If y'all think $100,000 were covered, if that's all we've been defending, $100,000, you know, it was more, plus we can't buy the trucks that we need because what we've got is wore out. We've got roll-offs that need this and that and the other. So to me, it seems like $100,000 is a little bit of money.
It is.
Before we go any further, though, Mark has been raising his hand. He's been very patient.
Mark, go ahead.
Please don't say that. Mark Bowles, 338 Porcelana Road. I did have an idea pop in my head, and I can't even say it's a good idea, but I wanted to say it while the conversation was happening. Sort of inspired by Mr. Page's tickets idea, but for C&D, what if you had, and I'm thinking sort of like with your fishing license, you get a fishing license, you pay a base amount, and you want to go snook fishing, you have to have a snook permit. What if you wanted to be able to drop off C&D, you had to get a second extra tag that you could buy at Mark Williams' office for $30 or $50.
Two-tier charge. Mm-hmm. One household garbage.
Well, I don't think you could probably do the two-tier through the tax bills, but if you like went to Mark Wiggins' office and bought an extra card that had your name and address on it, so it could be verified and not passed around for $30 or $50 for a year, then you could dump C&D there, and that would possibly help cover some of those costs. It may still result in stuff in the woods, but.
That's not a bad idea. It's a bad idea at all. If people brought C&D, they'd have to
have a fixed form. Yeah, have to get a C&D permit.
That's right. Yeah. And pay another set.
If you got a contract, $50 a year,
you can charge $100.
But what you run into, the people that's renting a $400 dumpster, they just start carrying it up there for that assessment card. That's what would happen.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I still think that would be smart if we allow folks to carry a little bit of junk. Like I got a little 56 camper place and some cows, and all I can tell you, y'all ain't around the farm, you got a little junk. You know, a couple old feed sacks, old piece of bottle wire that you don't need anymore, and you put it in, you know, I got some little old syrup tubs, feed the cows in, and I pile it up. Well, that's really good in the C&D. I don't think you'll charge somebody for that. You know, a little bit. If my wife does call for some of this junk I got in the yard there. She calls it yard art. I call it junk. You know, get rid of this stuff. Just a little bit, you know, maybe a half a yard.
And that's what we can
do. You don't want to make somebody have to hire a tweak this.
We could tweak this where the person that's just bringing small amounts.
Small amounts, let them in.
Yeah, let them go in free. Like I say, what's killing us is the multiple and the large. You know, we all have trailers full in there that are 14, 16 foot long, 8, you know, 7 foot wide, and they'll be 4 foot high, slamming.
Gary, if we took off the pickup truck charges, right, and only charged for the trailer loads.
Well, I think when you look at, yeah, when you look at the pickup, you know, that would cut the size. You're pretty sure a contractor's not coming in there with a pickup loaded, you know, you can eliminate the pickups and see how that works out. See, you know, I don't know.
I could cut most of it out because the person's not going to load that pickup 10 times. And no. I would dump 10 times. But we got a trailer to load it 10 times.
Just charge the trailer.
Yeah.
By the volume of, you know, like 5 pickups.
Now, what if a little wind comes through and I've got 3 truckloads, say, for instance. Okay, I bring 1 truckload today. When can I bring my other truckload?
See, a truckload, you're talking about 3 cubic yards, roughly. So that's not a lot at all. When the container's 40 yards, that's not gonna make hardly a
deal.
He brought in 12 cubic yards, that's not a large
amount. When you bring these 20 foot trailers,
when you bring in a, you know, a 40 or 50, 60 cubic yard of debris, that's what's and I don't have any answer for it, but I know this, that we're getting slammed by that. Multiple, I mean, it's just bizarre the amount they're bringing in to us.
Well,
and you can see
if you look at the pay schedule and you just take off anything that is brought in a truck, and we only charge for trailers on C&D and for yard debris, wouldn't that capture most of the issues that we're having?
It would, and then down here on the bottom too, on the batteries and tires, looking at that.
Right. So I gave y'all the fee schedule from our last meeting. If you just take off the charges for the pickup truck, if you consider raising the assessment, and then if we charge for anything for yard debris and C&D that's brought in a trailer, that might be the solution we're looking for. And then it would not include members of our population who are just cleaning up their yard a little bit or taking a little bit out of the shed. It would really capture people who are really making the impact to our tipping fees. Do you think?
I do.
So if I've got a little truckload of stuff, limbs, and then I've got two of those, can I bring one and then go back home and get the other?
You can handle all that.
Yeah, you know, for this fear that it's not C&D.
It's not a pickup load. Yeah, the pickup load ain't killing us.
It's getting bigger volumes, I think.
I just don't want to punish the people that just are cleaning up their yard.
Sure.
Okay. The other thing we've still got to consider, and I don't want to leave here without us talking about it, are the RVs. Because that's been brought up, you know, again today. It's been brought up, and I did have a business owner in town call me, and he said, you need to go up. This is what they charge in other counties, and Gary's provided that to us, what they charge. He said the RVs, he said they generate just as much trash as a house. A lot of them, we've got a lot of people now living in RVs and sheds because that's all they can afford. And I know there are some hunting camps that maybe not used except during hunting season. But if you have a if you have a business, so where you rent out hunting spaces, then you need to pass that charge along to the person that's renting your hunting space. Just, okay, this year, your charge is going to be this much because I have to now pay more for your garbage. And I know that this one businessman said that he does have a problem with campers. People live at hunting campers or something, you know, camps that they take their debris to his dumpster and his business. He's seen them do it and dump it there versus taking it anywhere else. So, we got to address that. Ollie, you want to say something?
I said a lot more to my just a few comments. I get heartburn when I see you take pine limbs, put them in a dumpster, seeing that you haul all the way through the landfill. Pine limbs can't hurt anything. We did it one time, had a CND landfill here, dropping in there and out there. But I don't know, has anybody looked at a, get somebody to permit a CND landfill? What's your average weigh when your trucks are packed? So some of them have 5-6 tons of.
About 4.5 to 5 tons.
That's all you got on that big stuff, and one of your big expenses is diesel, right? For your fuel, fuel truck maintenance. You got to figure a way to file a team, and I'm sure not. Separate household garbage and do what you're doing. But the other thing you don't like is that my clothes here do roll off. Like there's not about 15 people living in Taylor County there. And the engineering person don't set the one to shave road. We put one there, he doesn't have a compactor. What's your average? Would probably 4 or 5 tons that here it is. That's a waste. Good. And you know I play as many hours as you do the others. We got you need to figure a way to make it more efficient, but the thing that really bothers me is the pine limb and things that we pay $45. Some of them got that other junk. I know you got a problem, then you got to deal with it. And the other thing is on honey camp, I checked. Yeah, I want to tell you that I don't think anybody joined the county charge for honey camp. I don't think it's anything they're getting a check for. I'm getting out of it. I had people that had RV sites, I leased them RV sites. They don't take anything to the roll off. I don't even know where the roll off site is. And what the bill was, that's in the bay. I was talking to 100 something parcels. Some of us up there, garbage city, they can't even get there. They got the side, they go out to 51, and yet they pay a garbage. They don't give away some notarized affidavits. I do not use the low off side, especially on hunting camps. And you got to put something on the big thing. I got it. Now that you got a problem, you got to deal with it before I go up on the feet. And as I was involved in it, they all sell money at the plant, they all sell a landfill. So I just hate to see it filled up with pine limbs. And some counties promote recycling. Yes, you know, you find out they recycle a lot of their stuff. You look for capsule garbage goes to ourselves a lot less now because they recycle. There's a nonprofit group that takes all the cans, they sell them and give it to animal rights group. Anyway, just I don't have any solution, but that's my concern.
I'm not for closing any of my roads.
Oh, you know, that's just your budget. It's the most inefficient thing in the county.
It may be, but we'll let the next commissioner that takes my place do that. I'm not willing to do that. I'm not willing to cut services to anybody in my district. I stand firm on that.
If I can.
Now, Mr. Bridgewater, I'm sorry, I need to tell you. Almost forgot you.
Thanks for remembering. Stan Ridgeway, 91 Riverside, Steam Hatching. I'd like to enlarge on Mark's suggestion about and the pickup load and things over the pickup load. Mark Wiggins is setting up to use the police substation, the steam hatching, on a regular basis. If you folks decided that you wanted me, if I was going to have a long trailer or a large load, to go to the tax collector and buy a ticket for 10 cubic yards or 15 cubic yards or 5 cubic yards, I could do that in steam hatching. And then I could give the ticket to the attendant in steam hatching.
Mm-hmm.
It's something that Mark has a good suggestion.
I like that too.
I do too.
Now, we don't want people in steam hatching traffic having to drive to the courthouse.
And that would eliminate driving.
Yeah, we don't want that because that's an inconvenience.
And it would also bring in revenue to help it.
Okay, but we're getting somewhere.
Mr. Ridgway, didn't you say that Mark was using the sheriff's department trailer down in steam hatching?
The sheriff's trailer substation, the sheriff made it available to all of the Constitution officers to use on a regular basis. And Mark, at one of our meetings, said he was working up to use it. Now, how far along he is, I do not know. But this is something that I think would be wise to look into a little more, because it may solve a lot of the problems, at least for the whole south end of the county.
Okay. Let me say, I've talked with several citizens. Those that say that they're paying their fair share, if you like $140 is a fair share, they want the others in this county to pay the same amount. They say it cannot be two different fees for the same service.
Agreed.
So they said, I said, what about the limbs and the C and D? Said if you bring more than one load to the transfer station, he charged.
I agree with that.
If he tear down a chicken house, he needs to be charged. He needs to get a dumpster out there or be charged properly. So ain't no way in the world you can take a chicken house and put it in a dump site, pay $140 and think you justified it. Well now, when you told me that, didn't have one businessman sent across the state line. There's a up there, he pays $200 a year rather than $140. So I told him, I said, well, we can go up to $154 a year. He said, yeah, but when you bring them RVs up for the same service, then and you still need some money, I'm willing to go, but until then, don't you move it.
Mm-hmm. I'm hearing the same thing.
Yeah.
If you did bring everybody to the same level, and then if you did look at who the tax collector selling tickets based on some volume, hopefully over a pickup for me, then you would get the people that are tearing down something or that a chicken house or a shed or a barn or whatever, they would have to have a ticket if they did not want to go to Greenville.
That would work, because he could go get the ticket ahead of time when he went to tear something down. He could have them in his truck, and then he'd come by the dump, he'd just give that tenant the ticket, go load the trailer loads. Ticket
right.
For the trailer loads.
And he would not have to come here to get his tickets.
Mm-hmm.
He would have, if Mark is really carrying through with that, he could buy them right in steam hatching. And that would limit the long drive.
Yeah.
That would be fair.
Yeah. Okay, well, we've been talking about this for an hour. So I'd like to see somebody make a motion.
Can I say something first?
Yes.
If we look at this, and like Juan said, if we looked at going up on the assessment, and just doing the trailers, that might be a starting point to look at.
And that's what I was going to suggest. If somebody, I would like to just say that we raise the assessment, and actually, I think it should be raised more than 154. And we can raise it to 154, or we can change our ordinance and raise it to more than that. But raise the assessment, and then anything over a pickup truck. When you go to a trailer, then there's a fee for that.
Mm-hmm.
And then, now how to you would go get a ticket ahead of time for that.
That all the conversation I've heard, that's the best idea I've heard. If he doesn't have the ticket, he's gonna be driving.
That's right, okay.
So then it's just a question of what type of fee schedule. We just need to bring a fee schedule back to the board and some type of process for prepaying for debris. Correct?
I have one question. The first pickup load, or if you don't put anything in the pickup, the first little 8-foot trailer load and 8-foot. Some people have a toolbox in a new pickup truck. They're not going to throw limbs in the back of their new truck. They're going to put it on an 8-foot trailer.
That's right. Most people are not going to cut up the stuff small enough to put in a pickup truck. No way. If they got a whole tree to cut down, they're going to put it on a trailer.
All right, how about a pickup truck or a trailer not exceeding 12 foot? That's free.
You can put a lot on a 12-foot
trailer. Well, 8-foot. 8-foot trailer or a pickup?
How about a 6-foot trailer?
There is a 6-foot trailer truck.
I think something similar to a pickup truck bed would be
your... pickup bed would be 6 or 8 foot.
Mm-hmm. If you got a brand new truck, you're going to hire somebody to come over there with their trailer to pick it up in half.
Some of them have little car, little trailer behind it.
All right, let's do a pickup truck load or equivalent. How about that?
Or equivalent.
So you can use a little judgment there.
But then you roll off a tenant. You're putting them in a position that they're going to use anything I say, they're going to get cussed out.
Yeah.
it's not happening.
What kind of use to it?
Now, at least fee schedule, Gary, that you worked on, just trying to quantify, if you got a 12-foot trailer, and it's 5 by 12, that's 60, and it's 4 feet high, that's 240 cubic feet, divided by 27, that's about 8 yards, is that about right? I mean, my math was getting a little older. And so the per cubic yard was $4?
$4.90.
$5 a yard.
That's on debris. I mean, yard debris.
Same deal.
A 12-foot trailer, and we said it all about, what, 8 yards?
Yeah, those are the cost.
You're talking about $40, $50 for that ticket? Don't slow down some of that debris stuff.
Well, and when you talk about debris, like on the side of the road and all that, these counties are already doing that. Madison County is a good example. When you drive by their roll-off site, it looks like a state park. Because they generate so much cash, their tipping fee, I mean, their assessment is so high, they take no debris. So all that's just extra, you know, that's just money.
Yeah.
So all their sites are like that. But when they find somebody that's littering, absolutely throwing a bag out here, they go through it on the side of the road, they will charge you $500. They do. But he will absolutely hunt them down and get that $500.
I know if you get on a chicken out, you get a box filled with them.
They don't take it. They don't deal with any of that.
No, sir.
Do we just need to come up with a simplified fee schedule using a prepaid ticketing system and bring it back to the board?
We'll leave that out of our motion when we get one.
Okay.
Does anybody want to make a motion? I hate to make this motion, but I will do it.
What the motion will be?
You don't have to.
All right, I'm going to make a stab at a motion, and then you all can amend it. You can vote down or hurt my feelings at all. I move that the board, by resolution, increase the solid waste fee for county residents from $140 to $154. That can be done by resolution. And that the county eliminate exemptions for RVs so that RVs pay the same amount as a house. RVs and loaning camps. However, provided that if you have just a power pole like all it has out here. And if no RV attached to it, you don't pay any solid waste fee.
How you gonna charge Tony Camp?
Tony Camp's not.
That don't see the grow-off site, you gonna charge them to?
You get fired with this. That's what's in my motion now, we can amend it. RVs and hunting camps, but not just a power pole. And that a person will be entitled to bring to the roll-off site for these fees that we've discussed, household garbage, yard debris, up to the equivalent of one pickup truckload, and C&D up to the equivalent of one pickup load. Any additional C&D or yard debris will be paid for at a fee schedule that the board will approve later when staff presents.
Sounds good.
And I'll take that motion.
Okay. We have a motion by Commissioner Page, and we have a second by Commissioner Moody. Any further discussion?
I have a question, please. Commissioner Page, did you want to eliminate the increase in the assessment, excluding power poles? You don't want to eliminate the assessment for an RV hookup with a power pole, correct? Because we do collect revenue for that.
If there's an RV attached to that power pole and it's an RV, or if there's a hunting camp, okay, a house, okay, and it's connected to that electricity, then you get charged.
I understand.
If it's just a power pole sitting down here, you know that it's an electric power pole, and there's no RV attached, or there's no hunting camp.
Power turned off. They can't.
Power
turned off.
And if power turned off, you don't pay nothing.
While we're doing that too, we need to eliminate that card business. We need a sticker on it, because the card is getting passed around to the city people and everything else.
Well, let's not do that until.
Let's deal with that. I agree with you on that, then.
Okay.
And we can do that in another motion. All right, now, I'm going to say again now, my people attempt had a motion. It's a long motion, and we've discussed it, and I think we probably all understand. If you want to amend the motion, if we get a second for it, then I won't be offended. If it votes down, if you vote it down 4-1, I won't have my feelings hurt.
We've got a motion.
All right, repeat the motion now.
Well, it's to raise the assessment to 154 for all.
By resolution. We don't need it because that's provided.
And to eliminate the fee for travel drivers and hunting camps and to charge the 154 for those.
Eliminate the exemption.
Right. You said limit it to household garbage and one pickup truck, one pickup load?
One pickup load of yard debris or the equivalent, or one pickup truck load.
From
Merck of C&D or the equivalent.
Is that per day? One load per day, or something.
We can keep track of that. Well, get a second load the same day.
Well, if you're limiting one pickup load
at
and one C&D load for the 154, who's going to keep up with that?
Well, you do that as many times as you want to go get it, one load at a time. You have to keep up with it. Guy shows up, Gary, he's got one pickup load or the equivalent. Done.
Well, what you're saying in the motion is to charge everybody 154.
Yeah.
But your motion was to limit it to household garbage and one pickup load. You didn't say
per day.
Per day or per whatever.
For a week.
It sounds like that you're going to.
You don't have compensation for that.
No. 154 and limit it to household and one pickup of yard debris or C&D load.
Where
is that, a week or a
that
day?
That
was per visit.
Per visit. How about that?
You can't do it one time at a time.
Well, I mean, there's no perfect way to do this. Anybody else wants to recraft my motion, I won't be offended.
I like your motion, and we can monitor this. And if it's getting abused, Gary, you'll know that because you're in good contact with your roll-off attendants, and he'll say, listen, Let me tell you something, they're bringing in a trailer load, they're tearing that chicken house down, bringing in one trailer load at a time. And if you see that it's being abused, then, and we're not, we don't have our head above water, come back to us, and we can take another stab at it. But this is at least a good start. Yes.
I just had one quick question, because I honestly don't remember, I've done enough stories on this, but was the exemption in the resolution of the ordinance? It's in the ordinance.
I don't remember.
We had a separate ordinance.
Well, we had, I think we got a county ordinance that says you can go up to that amount. It's not in our community case.
The ordinance says the solid waste assessment can be changed up to 154 by resolution of the board.
Now, well, the question was not that. The question was about
are these, I don't remember that one.
It's a separate.
It's a separate ordinance.
It's a separate ordinance.
So then we have to change that.
I think the RVs, when they changed it, they did it by county ordinance, so what you got to do is go in and change that ordinance, have a public hearing and all that before you change all that.
But this won't be till next fiscal year any, right? So we can use this for budgeting purposes, which will be helpful.
And we're going to get lined up to take, to do the charging on the other stuff later on, is what you're saying.
Well, all this will take effect at the beginning of next
October 1st,
next fiscal year. Yeah. So this is just a head start, as Luan said, for budgeting purposes, just so that we can get everything in place. Mm-hmm. Now, if we want to limit this extra household, not household, but the limb and the CSD to one visit per customer per day, then you all speak up. Amend the motion, just keep that in there.
Well, my question to Comrade is, can you vote to eliminate the travel trailers and all without going through the ordinance strip code?
You're talking about the RVs?
Yes.
I think what you're going to have to do, it would be that you have to look at that ordinance and it may have to be amended. Okay? So my suggestion would be for this purposes, for this motion, you've got the authority to raise the assessment. Y'all been calling it a fee, but I call it an assessment to 154 to take effect October 1st, 2019, you know, for the next fiscal year. With respect to doing anything with regard to RVs or hunting camps or something, we need to look at our ordinance to see exactly what it did, to see if you could do that by resolution, because I don't know that you can. We'll have to look at that. So my suggestion is not to offend Mr. Page.
You know, would be
to say, okay, we are going to raise the assessment to 154, but keep in mind that you're going to have to do something with regard to the RV too, because you can't just raise, you know, politically, you just can't raise the 140 to 154 and not do something about raising the RV, if you follow what I'm saying.
I follow. Madam Chair, I'm going to withdraw my entire motion. I don't want to do this in a piecemeal basis. When we do the 140 to the 154, when the time's right, we'll deal with the RVs at the same time.
I agree with that.
Because if we do it piecemeal, we're never going to get to that second part. That's my thing.
Yeah, we, right, Jim? We need to do it when we start charging the trailer load at that time, too.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
So, really, anybody else want to make a motion? I withdrew that.
For one, because the county ordinance has established that the county ordinance allows them to go up to 154.
Correct.
On the special assessment.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So they can make a motion and second to increase that.
Right.
But they can't do one about the RVs and the hunting camps and that kind of stuff until you actually advertise to amend or repeal that ordinance and change it to something else and have a public hearing and go through the process.
Unless, pardon me,
Unless that ordinance says that you can raise that RV by resolution, we need to check it and see. I don't think it does, but we'll see.
But the board can instruct the county attorney to prepare a resolution and to research the additional ordinance and possibly prepare an amended ordinance, right, Conrad?
Sure.
Okay.
Could you make the motion to go ahead and to raise the assessment from 140 to 154 and include the RVs and hunting camps contingent on the ordinance?
You don't want to do that.
You don't want to do that? Then somebody do something.
Just instruct us.
Yeah.
Like Malcolm was saying, he's withdrawn his motion and there's been a second to the withdrawal. Would be to instruct the county administrator and the county attorney to sit down, take our ordinances, take a look at it, and see if in fact, number one, I know that we can raise the assessment, you know, to 154. Then we'll take a look at the RV ordinance, and if we need to prepare an ordinance to raise that or amend that for your RVs and your hunting and so forth. Not that we're doing it. We're just going to get them together. We'll have them together, and we'll do that.
Okay. Does someone want to make that motion?
Yeah, and then Paul models too, Paul.
The same as RVs.
Okay, the same. Yes, I'll make that
motion. Okay. Shoot, we have a motion by Commissioner Dents. Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Now, any further discussion?
I'd just like to move to give the citizens an opportunity to use Waste Pro. I have some black together, some people do, some don't. If I could use Waste Pro on my own, to be exempt from all my fees, we tried that one time. But consider that. We signed up and wait for some private contract to take ours to Greenville, then you wouldn't. And I remember that. We got some in the county to do that. And they did since the county didn't let me do it. That's something that really.
But that will affect our budget.
Everything you do affects your budget. Everything you do affects citizens too. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's something we can take a look at all later.
Okay, any more discussion? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Jim. You said it for me? Okay, where are we? We're on 20, general business number 20. The board to consider approval of the corrective warranty deed for the conveyance of 20 acres, more or less, at the Perry Foley Airport to the county, as submitted by Ray Curtis, attorney for the Taylor County Development Authority.
So this is the same piece of property that the TCDA conveyed to the county. There was an issue with the deed. Conrad and Kenneth Dudley and Ray Curtis worked on this together, and this is the corrective deed for that transaction.
Okay. Is there a motion?
I move.
Second.
Got a motion by Commissioner Dent, second by Commissioner Page. Any further discussion? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion carries.
Thank you.
County Attorney Otis, number 21, the county attorney to discuss claims regarding former county administrator Ted Leahy.
The attorney that's representing our carrier suggested that go to mediation on Mr. Lakey's claims. And if in fact suit hasn't been filed but is trying to get something done prior to that, of course gonna order you to mediation anyway. My only request would be that if, in fact, we agree to go to mediation, that I have a member of the board and that I also go. I'm not going to be cut out on, on that by the carrier.
Okay. Is there a motion to authorize our attorney to enter into mediation with the other attorney?
I'm not making that, but.
And one of your members commit.
Right. When they said it, then y'all can appoint one person.
We got a motion by Commissioner Moody.
We'll make second.
And we've got a second by Commissioner Murphy. Any other discussion? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Who would like to be the person to go with Mr. Bishop?
Do we have, we don't have a date, there is no date set.
No date set, yeah.
I don't mind to go if nobody else wants to go.
Is it going to be a no contest here?
Well, it hasn't been set yet, so usually what we've done is we've done it a lot of times at my office, but, or, you know, it's up in the air whether it's going to be a practical matter.
Okay. I'll volunteer to go.
Well, even though the one is appointed, other county commissioners are going to be able to attend.
Said you?
If one's appointed, we would have to publicly announce it, other county commissioners.
The problem of mediation is something that is confidential, because that's the only way you think you can get settled. So usually we've only had one commissioner go to mediation over the years. That's my recommendation.
I make a motion that we appoint Commissioner Teagle to represent the board in the mediation. She can go. I'd love to hear it too.
Okay, we got a motion. Is there a second?
Before y'all vote, let me just tell you. Okay. If you go to mediation, and hypothetically, if there's a recommendation to settle for a certain, y'all still have to approve it. Remember, you still have to approve it. So you're not cutting anybody out.
No, I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is transparency.
Well, but we can't have, we can't have the new mediation, because mediation is a confidential process. Because if you go, you know, if that comes out, because offers and compromise are not admissible in court. Okay, so you know, they make a request and we reject it, and then they go and say, well, they rejected it, the court can't do that. See what I'm saying? You know, count off.
Okay, so we have a motion by Commissioner Page to appoint me to go. Is there a second?
Okay.
Now, second by Commissioner Dempsey. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion carries. You haven't heard anything, from, you haven't had a phone call about number two?
Not yet, no.
Okay, would it be appropriate then for us to go ahead and make the motion contingent on?
Getting a clean copy.
Okay, someone want to make that motion?
I so move.
Is there a second?
We'll make second.
Second? Okay. Motion by Commissioner Page, second by Commissioner Murphy. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion carries. County Administrator items, number 23. The County Administrator to discuss informational items.
Our purchasing agent, Julie Taylor, has resigned after 22 years of service. Sarah Weirich has been hired to be the new purchasing agent, just for the board's information. She was our 911 coordinator for several years and has experience with grants administration and state and federal guidelines. We believe she'll be a very good fit for this position, and we are happy to welcome her to our team.
I think she's a good hire.
Mosquito spraying has started as of this past week. We have been fortunate enough to have hired two new drivers, so we have a total of 5 drivers now, which is good. So we are hoping we can retain all of them and work out a schedule. So we will be making those spray missions. They should continue this week. They started last week. As I get the schedules, I will forward to the board. Also, our...
Hold on that. I have a question.
Yes, ma'am.
If someone fills out the form so that the Mississippi truck can go down to their place because it's more than 150 feet off the road. Okay, so for instance, if you've got one road and you've got three mailboxes out on the road indicating there's three houses back there, how do you get one of the green signs that says, that has the number on it that could be posted? Could we furnish those? I see a lot of people with the number on in their yard.
I thought we had it one time for 911 addressing, but let me check on that.
Yes.
The high visibility address signs,
yeah, you can buy those at Ace Hardware.
Okay.
You can get them at Ace?
Mm-hmm.
The green?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, you can buy the blue or green signs. Usually the green is what the county uses for county roads and stuff like that, and then blue signs for private. We've traditionally as a county not gotten involved in making the personal signs for homes just because of doing things for private property. But the address signs are available at Ace Hardware, Home Depot, Lowe's, you can buy them online. Because we try to promote that with the fire department to have the 911 addressing, so when we're going to somewhere it's not a house on fire.
I'm glad you're doing that. I'm in
the
sun.
Good, thank you.
They do the numbering there, or they have to order
it? No, you buy a kit, and it comes with all the numbers that are stickered, reflective numbers, and you just put them on the sign yourself.
Well, I can get them upside down, but...
Then you got to buy a post and put your post in the ground.
Or you get if you had a mailbox by the road, you can put it on right on your mailbox, or just a 4x4 post, something like that.
A lot of them in the county, you'll have all the mailboxes out on the main road. Then you go down their road and there's 6 or 8 houses down there, and sometimes it's difficult really when you're campaigning to learn all this.
Yeah, like on our Facebook page we put a thing out about high visibility signs, and it like you said, if you don't have a mailbox that it's right there, putting it by a fence post or something like that, okay, or your main driveway.
Alright, thank you. Okay, go ahead.
As you all know, fishing's been very good so far this year. Our boat ramps have been very busy. We will start working with the sheriff's office, and some of our own staff for traffic control Memorial Day weekend, and just gearing up for scallop season. So we already have an extra attendant working on the weekends to try to keep our restrooms clean. We have 3 boat ramp attendants hired. We're still searching for additional boat ramp attendants. Sometimes that's difficult to fill. So we will use some of our public works employees for traffic control and also boat ramp attendants.
And that's an overtime pay?
Yes.
And we're advertising to try to get, and you don't have responses?
Well, we have 3 hired that we typically, that position is a little harder to fill. It's out in the sun, dealing with a large amount of the public. It's a seasonal position. I feel fortunate that we have 3 attendants, but we are still trying to hire additional attendants.
Okay, now, I know there's been discussion in the past about whether we can go up on the boat ramp fee or not.
Mm-hmm.
And then someone has said that since it was a grant, we're not sure we can. Could you find out, yes or no, can we increase the boat ramp day fees and annual fees?
Only if FWC agrees to it. And the last time I spoke with our tax collector about increasing the fees, we agreed it was somewhat of a process to... But there is a process we can go through to increase those fees.
So it can be done. It's just you have to go through whatever it is you have to go through to make it happen. And part of that process is that FWC has to agree. Okay. But then we need to, if there's any interest to discuss that, we can. If not, then, you know, I know it's been discussed in the past.
Well, I can bring the information to the workshop next week if you'd like. and let, and then we can review the process to see if it's something that the board may have interest in.
Okay.
If that would be helpful.
Yes.
This workshop Thursday?
Tuesday at 6 o'clock.
Tuesday at 6 o'clock.
Yes. So if you have any items you'd like to add to the agenda, please let us know within the next couple of days. We did receive our asset survey, and I have invited Mr. Conley to represent the carrier to present that to the board. We have some areas of concern. There are some buildings that somehow weren't covered, and we have several buildings that are underinsured. So I wanted to go through that full asset survey with the board, so we're all on the same page. We have noticed that at Forest Capital Park that we are losing trees at a rate of 2 to 3 per year, mainly due to lightning strikes. So we did ask the county forester to make a recommendation, to conduct a survey and make a recommendation. He has completed that, and he has recommended a planting schedule of 10 trees a year. And he is working on finding some, or looking to see if there's any funding available for that through the Arbor Day program. But we will present that to the board as well. I just wanted to bring your attention to it. Our concern is that all the trees look to be about the same size, and if we continue to lose trees every year, that we'll get to a point where we don't have any trees left. And just to preserve that site, we would like to consider having a planting schedule so we can maintain our trees.
I agree,
and let's try to replace those longleaf pine, I think.
They're yellow pine.
They would, yeah.
Yes.
So we have to plant them along the
That's the plan. And he recommended 10 trees a year because he stated that probably only 2 or 3 would survive. There's a lot of traffic out there.
Right.
And
I would hope we'd buy one maybe it's potted. It's already 6 or 8 feet tall.
Correct. That was the recommendation.
Longleaf pine, it looks like a twig, it's going to stop this.
That was his recommendation, that it be at least, I think he said 5 or 6 feet tall, and then we somehow cage it to try to protect it. But that's why we wanted to get the forester involved, because we felt like he could provide us with some expert advice on that. So we have
a fence around.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah, we can protect it.
Yes.
In the year. Keep young and out.
County staff, we are now going through our budget request process. We are trying to be ahead of schedule this year. And we have probably submitted about a third of our budget request now. Our deadline is May 31st. So I am confident we will get most of our budget requests by then unless there's an issue. And the library roof is scheduled to be for repair starting May 22nd. So we are making progress with that. And last but not least, we have an update regarding the Dead Man's Curve project. Kenneth has been waiting patiently since you
wow.
Thank you.
This is your
summary.
As you know, we did reach out to the 4 affected parcel owners for their realignment of Dead Man's Curve. 2 of those responded back fairly decently. The remaining 2, we had to send out a second notice. Since that time, one of those landowners has responded again. And I'll go over that in just a second.
This will be so good.
So what you see in the map there is the aerial of the existing alignment for the beach road, and then the curved alignment, which is the hatch area, is the proposed realignment, which is the tightest curve that you can make for the intended design speed through that area. So the byproduct of that is we affect the Nathaniel Williams parcel on the north, the Clark properties in the center, the Cindy Nemeth property also in the center, and then Melvin and Donald Bowden property on the very south. The Nathaniel Williams property and the Clark properties both agreed pretty quickly that they had interest in working with us for acquisition of the affected areas.
Clark and who?
Nathaniel Williams, the one on the far north.
Okay. Okay.
And what you can see is the spreadsheet that I gave you, or the 8.5 by 11 sheet, is the spreadsheet that identifies the parcel owners, identifies what type of property it is classified in the property appraiser's office, as well as the assessed values and the affected acreages to extrapolate an affected cost. The second sheet of that is the actual letter. This was actually the second notification that we sent out to the two remaining affected landowners. The third one there in the middle, Ms. Nemeth, is only go down to the Bowden. And it's my understanding that Commissioner Moody had discussions with the Bowdens with respect to this, and I was just waiting on written confirmation that from them that yes, we're okay with this process and we'd like to assist you moving forward. So at some point we just need some written confirmation that, even if it's an email that says okay, we need that something along those lines in your yes sir, just for the files. And then the last parcel is the one in the very center. And I've spoken finally to Ms. Nemeth as well as her attorney on two occasions. They're not adamantly opposed to our proposal, but the difficulty is that Ms. Nemeth expressed her position was that she felt with the alignment coming through her property and bisecting it that it rendered it less usable than its original configuration. And her position would be that she was only interested in it if we were going to acquire the entire parcel versus the affected amount.
I could kind of agree with her on that.
To a certain extent, you know, with the western side of it, with closure of that post Dead Man's Curve alignment, you know, we would be closing that right of way, which would revert back to the adjacent property owners. So she would still have a fairly developable portion of property, but obviously not in its original configuration. So, yeah, I can see both sides of it. That, you know, it's an opportunity, obviously, is to kind of work with a clean slate if we were to acquire this entire parcel versus having to move forward with trying to figure out how to develop it in the future. So the reason we're here is we kind of need some direction from the board on how would you like to us to proceed. Logically, at this point, if we had full approval from all the affected landowners, my next task would be I would issue a survey task order. I'd survey the alignment. I would do actual affected property square footage. Proceed then with trying to get an appraisal for those affected areas, including comparables, and then towards negotiation of acquisition.
Okay, now, Mrs. Newman.
Yes, ma'am.
Is where this blue line comes out here to a point?
Yes, ma'am.
That the rest of her property?
Yes, ma'am.
And that doesn't look like much. How much is it?
There's actually the overall blue rectangle or square is her entire parcel. So she would have a piece that's on the east side as well as a piece on the west side.
Come show me that. So this would be hers.
This entire parcel that is here,
uh-huh.
This would be hers. So she would wind up with a parcel on the east side as well as a parcel on the west side. Okay. And then we would close this, so out to the center of this right of way up to here would also be hers.
And if we had to purchase the whole thing, then this is just
county property.
Mm-hmm.
County property.
Yeah.
I mean, acre.
Seems like it's an acre and a half or so. Mm-hmm. This room. Mm-hmm. think that's what it was, something like that.
Mr. Duggan, can you look at this map?
One and a half.
Did the one chair really use some concerns with this property?
She did, and just for the benefit of the board, he's talking about the property that is on the west side of the existing right-of-way past Dead Man's Curve, and that's the Sadler property. And the question was the accessibility of that post-realignment. And you have to recognize that once this closes, that southern portion of that right-of-way reverts back to that adjacent landowner. So he will not only have this affected portion at the very southern extreme, you would actually have much more back up that's still going to be along that right-of-way. So we're not, my position would be that we are not landlocking it, obviously, and he still has, will have, highway collector road frontage even after the realignment.
But he won't have frontage on the new
road. Yes, he will.
Well, if we acquire the lease in this property.
No, sir, even along his, because remember the existing right-of-way on Beach Road would be abandoned. So if you drew a line right through the center of that right-of-way, all the way back up to Dead Man's Curve, that now is his.
The whole right-of-way?
That's correct, sir. So what you would see is, instead of it just being this portion here, that's his right-of-way, he's now going to have all the way back up to here. That's his right-of-way. And then his property will run all the way up to here and that way. So he now has
this. This is his property line here?
This one running, yes, sir.
But he wouldn't have property on the main highway anymore.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Yes, sir, down here. From here all the way back up to here will be his property. From right there to right there, that section.
But he's losing his property frontage from here to here.
He will not have as much.
You won't have as much.
That's correct. But is 200 foot enough? Is 300 foot enough?
How many years have that? Have to talk to him about that.
Understood. But I don't think that we have negatively affected his access to a collector highway sufficiently to warrant decrease in property values if that was a perception.
I think that's maybe perception. I'm not the negotiator, but it's probably on you staff.
Local road only requires 60 foot of access. You move up to collector road, you're talking 80 to 100. We have well exceeded that. So if you were even thinking about the developability of that property in the future, we've exceeded the width of access that would be required in our code. So I couldn't sit here and legitimately say, yes, we have negatively affected the developability from an access standpoint through this realignment.
Would we be negatively affecting the value of this property in your opinion?
I don't think so. I've increased it. I gave him more property. He is not losing any property, he's only gaining property.
I know, but he's losing some road frontage.
Correct. He is losing some. He has not lost all.
Have you spoken with him?
No, I didn't, because it's not an effective. He's a gaining landowner, not a losing landowner. So from an acquisition standpoint, I only need to talk to the gain to the losing landowners in order to try to acquire their property.
Okay, so what do we need to do?
You tell me, because the Nemeth in the center parcel is, there's only one, she out of her mouth. The only way you're going to get this if you don't go through condemnation proceedings is if you acquire the whole parcel.
And what is the value of the whole property?
She has her own opinion of that, of course. My perception is that we would be required to do an appraisal. We would only offer up to the appraised value.
And she could take that or she could not take it.
That is correct.
And then the other thing is eminent domain, which, you know, nobody wants to exercise that, but that is an option.
That is correct.
In the face of public safety, when you have deaths on this curve.
That is an option.
What's the speed limit going to be in this curve?
I kept the speed limit the same for 55. But that moves it up to a 60-mile-an-hour design speed, and then the maximum super elevation rate of 10% in the state.
In other words, a log truck coming off the Jack Creek Road is going to have to be in a curve. We've got to look both ways, and people are going 55. And he's trying to pull out the road with a log truck there?
Yes. If he's coming out of where, Gates Creek? Yes, sir.
That's going to be pretty dangerous out there in that curve right there.
My guess is you have, I wish I had a right scale on this. And we could, if it's, I would only say it's a problem if it's a visibility issue.
Well, it would be a visibility from both ways.
Not necessarily.
Log trucks in the middle of the road pulling out.
I understand, sir, but there are visibility distances that they are required to have in order to make a left turning movement, which crosses two lanes of traffic. So there is a time that's associated with that, which equates to a distance based on that vehicle traveling that fast. As long as they have that visibility, the facts are that's okay. If they don't, then we could do advisory panels that take in, as you're going into that curve, put a 45-mile-per-hour restriction on it, so that you lower the speed as they're coming, which increases the time that you have to make that turn. I did not pull a measurement to see if they are exceeding the visibility of that. If the other question was, if you're thinking of this, is if we, how could we not affect the Nemeth property? And one way is to flatten that curve a little bit. You know, let's not go to a 10% super elevation, let's hold it at a 5%, which makes that curve move to the east, which also increases your side distances. My worry with that is as this moves to the east, you start affecting the properties at the southern end further to the east, which you've got a borrow area there as well as an established business. And I'd start getting in their front porch, is
right.
Basically
what I'm right in the front porch the bar.
Yes, sir. And so that's why it's really not in a bad location relative to the existing uses. It's, you just have that one hurdle that I think to deal with on the acquisition.
Have we, has this board ever exercised eminent domain since you've been here?
Did it prior to me being the attorney, and Mr. Weed was the attorney, we exercised eminent domain on the Mayo Road, had a jury trial on it. But as far as since I've been the county attorney since whenever I came, I have not done it.
I'm assuming that probably would be a long process. What is the process?
Okay, the first process that you do is y'all need to vote decide that you want to exercise in the domain. Then you're informing us to file what we call a notice of taking, in which that at that particular point in time, the judge determines whether in fact the taking of the property is for a public service and it needs to be done simplistically. The judge says that in fact that it is for a public purpose, then the board would have to place money in the registry of the court for whatever the appraised value, we have an appraised value. Then you file suit and against the landowner. And of course, the landowner has the right to object to the notice of taking. But if the judge says, you can take it, then it ultimately ends up into you go to mediation and you try to settle it with them, and then if you're not able to do that, you have a trial with a 12-person jury, and the jury would determine, we have our appraiser go in and say what the value was, and then the landowner has the right to do that, plus what would be the damage to remainder, and the jury would determine what, in fact, the amount of the compensation would be for the property. It's a lengthy process, it's a rather extended, plus you have to pay the landowner's attorney's fees and costs also.
So it's not that the renter can ask for the other losing side to pay, it's always?
It always, even when you settle it, you have to pay the attorney's fees and costs for the other side.
I would hope we could do that without having to do that.
The biggest concern is that on that lady's property, you split in front of the property.
Damage to remainder.
And the damage to the remainder will be humongous.
I agree.
She is willing.
What is her asking price? Is that something we can't discuss right now?
I think it probably appeared in church at this place.
Okay.
I've had several people contact me and wonder why we don't put a red light there at Pearl. They said it was a lot cheaper than rebuilding the road.
Yes, it would be cheaper than building the road, but I do not think that it would be something that is consistent with the characteristic and the travel features of that road right now. This is a major collector highway with 2,000 vehicles or so per day. I don't see it as being consistent with that traffic pattern.
For safety reasons, what they brought that up for, for safety reasons.
Would slow it down?
You will, presumably if they do slow down. We've got another instance where we're dealing in Steinhatchee that you heard, a month ago, where the guy's wanting a four-way stop because people are having accidents at a stop sign. I went back and looked at all the traffic history of it, and it's not that they're running it, they're stopping. They're stopping and then pulling right out in front of another vehicle. So, your perception is that you can do this, and just like with the traffic signs, there are warrants that are required in order to do this, and some of those are major volume roads, minor volume roads. Again, I don't think you're going to need those warrants in order to do that.
Well, on 4 lane house, going four directions right there, you might as well play Jack Creek Road and the Beach Road. I mean, it's a four, you can make a four-way stop there. I mean,
I
would never agree to that, because I think that would make it more dangerous.
About like my turnaround idea there.
Yeah, I know this past weekend the traffic was heavy on the Beach Road, and in a month it's going to be
2,000 vehicles per day is a very realistic number for typical traffic on that road.
I'm not for a stop sign or a stop light. We need to make this curve so it's a continuous route. This is my opinion, where it's a continuous route and it's safe.
I'm thinking that thing out there with all the stop signs on, all those red lights on it, what they were talking in conversation. You got more than 2,000 going through a mini red light here in Beverly County.
You do, and it wasn't long ago they went through and took out a lot of those median interruptions because they're wanting to make sure they can keep the traffic corridor moving as much as they can.
Well, 1998,
That's what I was talking about.
Yeah, but you got Fulton Cemetery Road and a red light there, coming across the border mill, and you got all the motor trucks and everything else crossing out there. This looks mighty dangerous in this curve at 55 mile an hour for a log truck, is what I'm saying. For safety reasons. I don't see why they couldn't keep the old road coming back up here and tie into the curve.
And that's why I took and wrote a note to myself to go back and check the visibility distances on that.
Right.
And see, just to make sure, just to make sure that, you have that. And if we don't, then the obvious fix to that is a speed reduction as you're going into that, in order to make the visibility distance match that speed. So I will check that.
If you recall, when we replaced, or not we, but when the state replaced the Oslo River Bridge, it was the opinion of the residents there, and I agree that the visibility was much worse with the bridge. It's higher, and you got the road coming out from Osceola Landing.
Yes, ma'am.
We met down there with FDOT officials, several of them, and a lot of the residents, and as they even witnessed some of the rock trucks and all coming across the bridge at that rate of speed, they went back and they said, we feel like it would be less safe if you slowed that traffic down. We wanted it slowed down a lot. And their analysis was that's more dangerous than leaving it the way it is. But they did compromise finally. And they reduced the speed. And they put up blinking lights. So
I think they're actuated too, aren't they?
They are. Yes. And so if a boat or somebody's pulling out of a civil landing, then it warns the traffic on the road that's
on the main roadway.
On the main road, yes. Exactly. So there's all kinds of things that can...
Well, obviously, we would try to go with a passive system that accommodates visibility so that you have normal maneuvers safely, versus the added expense and O&M of an active system that requires a change in the driver's behavior in order to accommodate safety. I'd much rather make it just, okay, I'm approaching the curve, you know, when you get off the accelerator here, I run through it at 45, and in doing so, that side street turning movement still has sufficient time to clear and get back into their lanes for the left turn movement without impeding or impacting the main roadway.
Yeah, my objective is to make this safer.
Yes, ma'am.
You know, we can't bring back my mom and my aunt, but we can sure do, and the other people that have died there, but we can sure do something to everything that we can that doesn't happen to somebody else's mother or brother or sister or whoever. And that's my objective.
I agree. We actually have, I think it wasn't too long ago, there's a HIST, it's Highway Safety Program, for lack of knowing the full acronym right now. But we are looking at, with the University of Florida, going, this is with, I think, one of the other DOT consulting engineers, that the full 36 miles worth of the Beach Road corridor, we are looking at signage and pavement marking improvements in all of the accident and traffic, the curb configurations throughout that full length. And I told them that, you know, this is one of the things that we're looking at here. So we'll have some signage improvements in the interim until we actually bring this to fruition. But ultimately, this is a possibly much safer configuration.
So it seems like to me that you need to try to negotiate with this one landowner and
What I would suggest is that, you know, if that is what she wants to do, instead of she just telling me that, then I would say, you know, okay, give me a written response to our request. And if your response is a proposal that includes XYZ, then that's what we'll present to you guys, and then we'll go ahead and perform the logical sequence of next steps with surveying and appraisals.
Yeah, if I own this property, I understand her position. You know, you're going to put a road right through her property, and it renders it, you know, really not very useful, but... it's worth what somebody's willing to pay for it.
That's
I guess, you know, but I would hope that she would be reasonable and know that we're not trying to, we just want to make it safe for everybody.
We tried to impress that in the letter, but obviously as a public agency, you know, we will appraise it at whatever the comparables suggest that it is. The intangible value of it is hard to capture, and I don't know that you know, Connor can correct me, I don't know that you have a lot of latitude on tangible value versus comparable values.
We have some latitude.
You may have to use it.
Okay.
Just a hint.
I really appreciate your work about this.
Like this idea.
Yeah. And go forward and do good.
I will.
You're waiting for Mel and Val to give you a response.
That's right. I knew that Mr. Moody has spoken with them. I'm just waiting for the written confirmation of that to put with our documentation. And then I will reach back out to Ms. Nima because she gave us a working phone number, as well as her attorney, and I will request a written response that states their position, and that'll give me something definitive to present to you guys to say, here's what the situation is, give me the marching orders.
He wanted to make sure he had access to the bar pit there. You see the bar pit there?
Yes, sir. Yeah, and it is, matter of fact, Mr. Mooney, you know, the stuff we, the effect on it is,
not very much right there in front of
it. No, sir. It is 0.001 affected acres.
Right.
It was literally, I think it was just like a few hundred square feet.
Right.
It was very small. Mm-hmm. It literally just clips it. It almost makes you wish you could just squeeze it just a hair, not even affect them. But,
right.
You know, the I don't deal. And when we survey it, you know, these are lot lines that were pulled from the assessor's site. So when we actually assess it, I mean, actually survey it, it may not be effective.
Right.
You know, maybe 3 foot to the left. And
he did not work with us. He's going to make sure he had access to the bar pit. Yes,
we will not restrict that.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Did you have anything else, Betsy? Okay, item 24, comments and concerns from the public for non-agenda items. If you're here today and you wish to speak on something that was not on the agenda, you can come forward, state your name and address, and speak for 3 minutes. Yes, thank you. Thank you for your patience.
Thank you for just being there for us. Dale Dicker, 426 Granger. I'm here to speak about the concerns that were not mentioned when there was approved.
Can you speak up a little?
Certainly. When you approved keeping the bridge, which was a good idea, but you've only talked about the recreational aspects, people being able to walk across, mm-hmm. which we enjoy, people being able to drive a golf cart across. Those of us who that flood so often, they are going to rain. We're not able, but most of us don't have a golf cart, because if we did, it would rust out because it floods so often. And so what we are concerned about, the residents here, Mr. Higby and Mr. Mack, and myself and the others who, if they could have been here, would have said to you, and I'm sure they would have, some of them wrote to you, our concern is safety. And we are approaching the storm season right now, where we're going to have storms, and you know yourselves, and some of you have beach places, and you're very familiar with our beaches. You don't know when some squall is going to come up. I sat on the front porch around the 4th of July, and I have had it just see a squall line, and within literally minutes. And on the one that I remember the most, at least one person died, and I think maybe more. But it came up just like a flash, and it can be a flash flood. And whenever that water comes over our seawall, it merges right away with the water over in the canal right behind me. And I was just telling Sean recently that our edge of our road is literally the edge of the canal. The edge of the road, there's a little bump of dirt where they push it up with the grader. That little bump of dirt right there, that then we're turning out of there and trying to turn around with a boat and a trailer, we're almost in the drain. So what I'm saying to you is, it is not safe. It is an issue of public safety and our lives out there to have more than one egress off that peninsula, because when Mr. Granger, he was very wise. When he built that out there, and I think some of that land was built up out there. I'm not sure how they did it, but I know our place has been there over 50 years. John's father built it to retire. He died the next year. He was a hardworking sawmill man. And we have tried to take care of it as best we could. We've enjoyed it, being able to be out there. But it is a safety issue not to have that second way out. Being behind a car before trying to go out, and a car that flooded out, and I was able to back up into my own driveway, turn around, and go back over the bridge. It is not safe for us to be out there without that. I ask you to, I urge you, when I learned from the lady at DOT, I talked with her before and after the hearing on the 6th, and she assured me, she said, we're trying to get a category scheduled for the small bridges. There will be a big competition with the big bridges. Because right now, there's no chance for the big bridges, little chance for the small bridges to be funded because the big bridges get the funding. And so she's trying to work that out. But she says, even when the bridge is funded, it's on the list, but it's not funded. When it's funded, it will be 5 more years. Mm-hmm. It's not safe for us to go a few more months. This season, we need that bridge repaired enough, if you can repair it enough for a golf cart to go over. And that's not our major concern. The people in the community like to drive across it in a golf cart. Our major concern is human safety. And we want our people that live on our street to be safe.
What you're asking, and your time's up, but I'm going to have a little bit more because you waited a long time. I'm feeling real nice today. But anyway, so what you're asking is that you would like to see the bridge repaired to a state that cars can go over it now, waiting on potential funding for some time later.
They won't penalize us. They won't penalize us, but they are according to Melissa there. And I would say, the other thing is, I would say to have a fine for people who use that bridge, that who would go over it, and we'll see when people, they shouldn't be going over it. They have a fine. Have that posted, and have it posted out there on the road if you need to. But this is negligible. I think it would be negligence for the county to do this, and for not having. And when I spoke with Malcolm and Jim and different ones, the first feeling I remember with Malcolm, he said, "Yo, it just sounds like we need to replace that." And you've done it before. It's always been repaired. We never had to wait before. And we never had to deal at risk. So
but I appreciate you coming and expressing your concern. And
John, yes,
just give us a chance to see if there's any funding available.
Thank you.
And let us see if there's anything we can do.
I think we appreciate it. John has some photos he'll share with you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Hey, John.
Hi.
Hi.
My name is John Dickard. I'm from Perry. I've been here a long time.
Long time.
We live at 426 Granger Drive. So I had some pictures I made of the bridge. Back when I worked with Perry Lumber Company, we put in a wood treating plant, and I did most of the work. Then we used to have the county come by on a regular basis, and they get some treated lumber, timber for the bridges they needed to fix. So I'm familiar with fixing bridges, and I just wanted to show you what the bridge y'all are looking for. Yeah. So I got 2 months. Okay. This pass is line looks good. Actually, there's not that much wrong with that bridge. It was doing fine when the county closed. Except somebody ran over the guardrails on one side. If there's any problem with the bridge at all, it might be straightened up some of these timbers.
Repairable.
Yeah, it can be repaired easy. I mean, since Kevin passed it on down, I didn't know if y'all had seen that.
Some of us have seen it, and just give us an opportunity to see if there's funding and talk with our engineer.
It was all pretty anyway.
It was pretty, yeah. It was pretty.
That's pretty lumber on here, son?
Yeah, it's pretty lumber, all of it. Yeah. And you already got a sign, huh?
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
That's kind
so,
of curious, a little.
It's got a guardrail on one side. keep driving over the edge of it. It's been there for years, 50 years like this. 50 years. It's repaired any number of times by the county. And that's on one side. And on the other side, somebody probably drove a trailer over the thing and got caught on.
No.
And that happened on occasional places. They just go in and replace the place of border. But I just wanted to bring that by and show you. I think it's repairable and they could be done within a week.
Okay. Well, thank you. Appreciate it.
I have a question. Yes. I know it's getting late, so I'll make my question brief. The county didn't just, Mr. Douglas,
yes, sir.
We didn't close the bridge. The state recommended that they close it, didn't they?
The state gave us a prompt corrective action that said you need to close that bridge to all pedestrian and vehicular access because the structural integrity had degraded to the point that it was unsafe. So this is not something that they did on a whim. This has been in the tonnage listing that you see, I think it said 3 tons. That's only 3 tons because that's the least amount that they can post. This thing has been degrading for a number of years. What you see on the surface isn't necessarily indicative of the decay and the lack of structural soundness that's underneath. That's what DOT looks at. They do a complete surface all the way to a substructure analysis. They review it every 2 years. This bridge had actually, the frequency on inspections had increased to, I think it was a 6 month process or 6 month frequency because of this severity. So this is not something on a whim. And what looks to be minor things have very major ramifications.
So
the structure underneath needs to be repaired, and that's possible to do.
I can't argue with you know what you're saying. The state has inspected it; they wanted it closed down. You see the way it is, but let us. We appreciate you being here, and let us just see if there's anything we can do. Okay.
Okay. Well, anyhow, I agree with him on this one side of the bridge there. They need to look into that. I leave this for the
thank you. Anybody else have anything to, that you want to comment on that wasn't on the agenda? Okay, if not, I'm going to go to item 45, board information items. Commissioner Murphy?
I have nothing to say.
Commissioner Dent? Commissioner Page?
None this time.
Commissioner Moody? No. Okay, and neither do I. Is there a motion to adjourn?
Vote.
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Motion carries.
You asked me not to come in about the census thing. You got a memory of the thing that I have.
Apparently, there's a problem with the engine. We can work something out.
Okay.
No problem at all.
You don't want to find out.